I put the microphone on this little side table, so it's not on the main table, so I can, like, touch my computer and
slam your fist
pick
on
up
it.
Glasses and put them up and down and
slam your fist on it.
Not have every get onto the microphone.
Slam your fist on it when you're real mad.
That's on the table.
Yeah. So when you get
this
really
mad.
This is
on the side table.
No, on the main table, though, when it's like,
yeah.
Oh, I can't believe at Toy Fair they did this. What the f*** is going on down there? Welcome to the doghouse. That's what I like to call my apartment right now, because it is in shambles. It's not. But there's like a bunch of Lego boxes on my couch, and I feel like a slob. I'm joined by Seth Buzzard.
Hey.
Yo.
Yo.
How's it digging?
I'm a little bummed.
How come?
It's nothing bad. I mean, it's something bad, but I mean, it's not. It doesn't directly affect me.
Oh.
But a second member of my favorite band, Devo, has passed away.
I saw that headline and I thought of you immediately.
Yes, Bob Caselli. Or Bob number two.
Ah.
And then I get an email from a Kickstarter I funded for a Devo documentary apologizing that we're not getting DVDs probably until sometime late next year.
Oh, man.
Because, well, one thing, they have to keep kind of doing some recuts when these guys pass away. So the drummer, Alan Myers, died last year. And now Bob. So they want to make some changes to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Then they submit a cut to the band. The band requests some changes. Then they got to make those cuts. And now they've been accepted into both Sundance and South by Southwest.
Oh, wow.
And so, as you know, if they're in the film festival circuit, they're not coming out on DVD.
No, they cannot distribute that because film festivals are stuck in old-time thought processes. They're all like, oh, we want to debut it because then we'll get more audiences. Like, whatever. Like, who's... The people who go to Sundance often, and I don't mean this as a down talk to anyone, but the people who go to Sundance, the people who buy the DVD, are two very separate crowds, for the most part.
Yeah. Well, now I've funded two film projects through these sorts of things, one on Kickstarter, one on Indiegogo,
mm-hmm.
and both of them are just kind of like, I don't know, maybe you'll get a DVD eventually.
Yeah, I mean, Indiegogo, that's the only scumbags use Indiegogo. Like, that was your fault.
That was my fault.
Yeah. Learn from it.
I don't even know.
Like, you haven't even heard from like that guy for a while, right?
I mean, what? I mean, short films, really?
Who funds? Ugh. And that guy's, like, vanished off the face of the map.
Well, that's the category during the Academy Awards where people are like, how do you even see these things? Where do these exist?
You see them because distribution companies get screener copies of them all the time, so those people watch them, and that's about it. It really sucks that, like, short films are in a real crappy place, because either they go off the grid for, like, a year and a half after they're made, or more, to go through festivals, and then probably never get heard of again, or they go straight to the internet, where no one can really make any money off of them other than exposure, and while that's not bad, it still kind of sucks for everyone who worked on it, because it's like, yeah, it's on the internet now, that's what all your work is for. Click it.
Well, there's a program on PBS called Image Makers, which is all short films.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be 2 to 5 short films per episode, like really depending on how short the films are. And that show is really good. I've seen some really great stuff on that. I've also seen some garbage.
Probably funded by Indiegogo.
Who knows?
Well, we're not here to talk about crowdfunded short films. We're here to talk about
big budget Hollywood blockbusters.
And the merchandise that has stars talking in them.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is actually the second clip from this group. This is Rick Sellers and Wes McCraw duo at Creekside Audio. A couple weeks ago, they shared a clip of Rick Sellers doing the voice of the toy sound chips for the upcoming movie Grimlock Toys, where he put on a I didn't really care for the voice very much, but he put on a loud, throaty voice, and then Wes McCraw put a gajillion effects on it, and then it's going to get run off of a toy sound chip, so it'll be completely, you know, the bass will be gutted from it, and I have no idea what it'll sound like. But it was still kind of interesting, because you don't really get to see much of the production side of sound chips for toys nowadays, and I find that kind of astounding, given that that gimmick has been around for, like, decades. So they put up another piece of video where they did the same thing, only with friggin' Peter Cullen, who was recording all of the, I think it was all the merchandising Optimus Prime voice clips. And that's stuff for toys, roleplay toys, or anything that licensors can use. I don't think that specifically means the video game. I think video game voice acting gets its own dedicated recording time, if I understand correctly. But this would be for, like, you know, stuff you find at Five Below or the dollar store where you push a button and Optimus Prime says something, or, you know, like a talking birthday card or something like that. Like, this is to go into this, to create, sorry, the sound pool that you provide to licensors for that kind of stuff. And it was a neat clip because, you know, it was all done remotely, which is, you know, the power of technology nowadays. There was some of the performances in the Lego movie were done in a similar way where they, you know, they hook up over, I think over Skype, actually. It might have been a phone call in this case, because Peter Cullen's recording in L.A. and these guys are in Ohio.
Well, there's shows that record at distances like that. Like, I know Venture Brothers, they have cast members on both coasts.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because James Urbaniak, who does the voice of Dr. Venture,
yeah,
was moving to L.A. And this was, around season three, I'm guessing, before season three started.
Mm-hmm.
And fans were like, oh, this is the end of the Venture Brothers because all the production's on the East Coast, and everyone started freaking out. And then, like, the creators went online, and they're like, you know, Patrick Warburton has always lived in L.A. Like, we're already recording these dudes remotely. It's not even a problem. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, like, it works. It's never going to be identical to having everyone in the room, but, you know, come 2014, it can work to have someone remote. It's all about, you know, how well you communicate to each other over the line while you're doing the recordings.
Well, and very little, I mean, really, it doesn't seem like it's that different, because very little voiceover work is done with, like, the entire cast in the same room acting it out.
Yeah.
It's like, I think The Simpsons still does it, and that's it.
And I when I found out, like, Archer does all the, as far as I know, going by some featurettes I saw, Archer does a lot of its voice work, you know, in solo recording. And the chemistry and the cadence of that show, given that it's all recorded separately, is frigging astounding. Like,
yeah, so when you are recording people separately and the director is in a booth, and maybe the actor and director could see each other through a window, but I mean, that's not much different than doing it over, like, an ISDN line.
Yeah, we have the technology now.
We've had it for, like, 20 years.
Well, I mean, how are we... We're talking over a rotary, right? I mean, an internet rotary, basically.
Well, like, I even... Like, mid-90s, listening to the Alex Bennett morning show on the radio here, he would call out other morning shows because some of the phoner interviews would be done on ISDN lines, which sound like they're in the same room. They don't sound like telephone. Like, when you hear somebody on the phone on the radio, you can definitely tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, with ISDN, it sounds like everybody's in the same room. And I guess some shows would try to play it off like that phoner guest was actually there.
Oh.
And try to create banner about, like, wow, that's a cool shirt you're wearing, even though they can't actually see the person. And, like, Bennett would always, like, call out dudes that did that stuff. I'm like, I know Opie and Anthony would call out people who fake things on the radio like that. And
yeah.
So, I mean, so going back to the early mid-90s, with those lines, you can get, like, crystal clear audio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's even better stuff than ISDN now.
Oh, yeah. Like secret NSA internet Skype.
Mm.
Watching us fapping. Seth, did you get a chance to look at this clip?
Unfortunately, no.
All right. Well, the only other thing that I really wanted to share from it, like the lines he's doing, the Peter Cullen's doing, are super, super Optimus Prime lines. Like,
yeah, just like,
we have to save the Earth and roll out Bumblebee. But
anything about freedom and sentient beings?
There's one part where he says, a storm is coming. And I was like, ooh, that sounds like a crazy person in a shack getting ready to head to town with a shotgun.
Yeah, I mean, I am interested to check it out. I definitely will, like, when we're done. But I just didn't have time to watch it before.
The only other interesting thing... Oh, good.
I was going to say, because I like checking out video of voice actors working.
Yeah.
It's one of those things I find interesting. Like, on the Cartoon Hangover channel on YouTube, they're the folks that do Bravest Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
They put up a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff showing the voice actors working.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind watching the 5-year-old that does the voice of Catbug. Like, reading all of his lines and acting the character.
In this video...
And it's like, my nephew is a 5-year-old. He can't read nothing, let alone a script.
The one misleading thing about this video is the thumbnail shows a picture of Peter Cullen. That's a still image. You never actually see Peter Cullen, because they only have the camera in Ohio.
All right. Then I'd forget it.
But you get to see these two guys fawning over Peter. Well, you get to see Rick Sellers fawning over Peter Cullen, and you get to see Wes McCraw, the engineer, just going like, Rick Sellers like, it's an honor, sir, blah, blah, blah. Peter Cullen's like, oh, thank you. And he's like, oh, Wes McCraw is here, too. Peter's like, hi, Wes. And Wes's like, oh, hey. Wes McCraw is just a total sound engineer. He's like, yep.
Yeah. Wes McCraw is here, too. And Peter Cullen's like, who? Wes McCraw, what's it?
Peter Cullen's very polite. He's like, how's your day? Wes McCraw's like, very good, thank you. Like, that's
look, I fawned over Peter Cullen in person back in 07, so
you got one
I don't
up
need
on,
to watch other people do it.
You got one up on Rick Sellers fawning over him in a phone call.
Mm-hmm. I did it in person, and he spoke into my telephone.
Damn.
My cellular telephone.
Was it a flip phone at the time?
Mm-mm.
I forgot the era.
It was a Sony Ericsson, and it, like, twisted open.
Oh, yeah.
Was that orange one that I had?
I remember that.
Yeah, I like that thing. It was cool.
But, yeah, this is an interesting clip, and I hope they keep putting these up, especially because I mean, this is me, like, getting more hungry for information, but I actually really would love to see more about the industry end of people who do just, like, you know, sound engineering and acting, even video for some things, for toys. Like... What creates the data that's stored on the little chip inside the toy? I want to know more about that. Also, it's cool to hear a proper high-def recording of what's being said before hearing it all, you know, crackly. And, yeah, with no bass at all and made to be like 8 kilobytes.
I like some of those videos and stuff I've seen where people do like the chip bending or whatever they call it, where they mess with those toy sound chips and make them crazy.
I really like it when some people mess around with sound chips and toys, primarily with Bandai toys, and discover, like, just leftover sound data. And, like, there was some toy, I can't remember what, it was one of the Toku series from the last couple of years, and there was just a random sound effect from a show from 3 years beforehand buried in the chip. You could find it by, like, just, like, you know, barraging the sound chip with input. And, like glitching it up. And you just suddenly hear this completely unrelated clip from 3 years prior because it's just the data happened to be sitting on the chip and they didn't delete it because the chip was, you know, it had enough space. Like, stuff like that. I'm like, man, I wish we could pop open those chips and just see what's buried in them.
Yeah, like, some of the stuff that I'd seen, like, they'll open up the toy and rip the sound chip out and then, like, solder lines into it and then use dials and stuff, too. To, like, bend and warp the audio that's playing and get different effects out of it and make it just sound crazy and weird.
Yeah. There was one back in what was it? 2011, I think. There was a Rider toy that used, what is it? RFID chips to, like, you'd scan them and get different inputs, like the Skylander chips. And so to quote-unquote, this was legit hacking the toy to find out what sounds were in it. Some guy in Japan had built... like an RFID, like, digital input system with a calculator that he hooked right into the wiring of the toy, so you could input bit streams, like every variation of ones and zeros. to find out exactly what was inside the sound chip. And there were sounds he found that never got unlocked by companion toys.
Weird.
Which was really cool. Like that side of it. And I never quite understood how he did it. And then ever since then, Ryder toys have just been like a lot more simple, just like switches and stuff. So you don't actually have to do anything like soldering, but people still call it hacking when they like use chopsticks to hit three buttons at once. And I'm like, that's okay. Well, sure.
I think a dude like soldering up a calculator is like way crazier.
So much cooler. And that is hacking. Using two chopsticks to hit two buttons at once yourself rather than sticking in the toy with the molded stuff is, I don't know. I can't deal with calling that hacking. That's like life hacks. It's like, okay, sure, it's hacking because it's the 21st century. So
I like when I see somebody post a bunch of life hacks and half of them are like, it's like, yeah, you didn't know. That's just the easy way to do that thing.
You know, you can tear off like those coffee cup lids. You don't have to take the lid off. There's a part that rips and folds back to form a little sippy spot on the...
Yeah. I wish I could remember this one specifically I saw a couple weeks ago where I was just like, doesn't everybody already do that? Like, I wish I could remember what it was so I could throw it down, but...
I know I've seen something similar with, like, it's not the one about the ketchup containers, because that actually surprised me, but...
What was the ketchup container?
That the way they're folded up to form a little cup that you can actually, like, pull on both ends to unfurl them into a big, like, dipping dish.
You know, like those little packets?
No, the little paper cups at like McDonald's that you squirt ketchup into.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can actually unfurl those somewhat, but it's too much work.
We used to have bigger paper cups that were similar, like how it's like sort of folded paper.
Yeah.
Like how those little cups are. But these were bigger cups meant for water out of a water cooler at work. And one of my coworkers pulls one out of the paper cup dispenser, cups it over his mouth, like puts the cup over his mouth and goes, hoo, and the whole thing puffs up and now it holds like twice as much water. And I was like, that's genius. Genius.
Was that before the trend of the life hack?
Oh, yeah, this was like 95 or 96, something like that.
So he's like a life pioneer.
Yeah. And I'm like, how did you know that? And he goes, I don't know. Just I saw somebody else do it. I'm like, I'm going to show somebody else how to do it. We're just going to keep this ball rolling.
Who's the patient zero on that one? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Probably the guy that designed the cup in the first place and was like, stupid. Like, that's why it's shaped like this.
Dummies.
But also on that train, I saw a picture somebody posted. It wasn't presented as a life hack. It was just like a, did you know? And they were stating that the Chinese takeout food container,
mm-hmm.
the little carton.
Oh, I think I know this one.
Yeah, you open the whole thing up and it turns into a plate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I never thought that.
No, and me neither.
Like, I show my dad, who grew up in San Francisco, where there's Chinese restaurants every 2 feet. And I'm like, did you know about this? And he's like, what? And I show him my laptop, and he's like, I've never heard of this. Like, if anybody heard of it, it's somebody that grew up in San Francisco would have heard of this.
It's because the pop culture imagery of that box is like, you know, the open box top with a chopstick sticking out. It's just, you assume, because every piece of imagery you ever see with that thing is eating it out of it like a box.
Yeah, like, well, if you're just eating out of it on your own, then that's easier.
Yeah.
But, like, presenting it as a plate on the table for, like, the whole family to take from is mind-boggling. Anyway, Transformers.
Well, I don't have a mind-boggling topic to follow up on. I just have a topic that follows up on something we talked about.
You're transforming a box into a plate. It's all on topic.
Exactly. Well, a couple weeks ago, we were talking on topically about Titus Welliver. Who said that Transformers 4, it wasn't a couple weeks ago, it was last week. He said, Transformers 4, it ain't for the kids. And that made some press. I figured that just meant, yeah, they've never really been, like, for the kids in the sense of they're kid-friendly. There's all kinds of, I mean, movie 3 opens with, like, a girl in her underpants running up a staircase with the camera pointed at her butt. But I guess a whole bunch of people who are in a position to do so, like, called Titus Welliver and went, like, you have to do something about this. Because there's a huge kids' toy line coming out along with this Transformers movie. So,
Paramount... Well, not only is there a huge toy line, but that's also a big chunk of the movie-going populace.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't want parents thinking they can't take their kids to this movie.
So, Paramount Pictures apparently reached us, whoever that is, with a corrected statement, quote, Titus misspoke and released the following statement to clarify his comments, quote unquote.
He signed his name to the statement that we wrote.
I misspoke in my last interview when I said Transformers 4 was not a kids movie. What I meant was that this film will in fact expand their target audience and bring in a bigger fan base. Following the huge success of Transformers and their toy line, it certainly is a kids movie. With the addition of Mark Wahlberg, Transformers 4 will be the coolest in the franchise. So he... It's just funny because this is still like someone just like stepping on a loaded gun over and over again. Because it's like, yeah, there are people who aren't kids who are in, there have been since the first one, but whatever, dude. Titus Welliver is now becoming my favorite actor in Transformers 4. But
I had no idea he was American. I just pulled him up on the Wikipedia because I only know him from Sons of Anarchy, where he plays a member of the IRA.
Oh.
So as far as I knew, he was just Irish. And I was getting ready to do my, like, really bad Irish and like, reread his statement. Like, oh, today.
I like how rereading his statement in an Irish accent would add in a whore at the start.
Well, everything they say starts like that.
Oh, of course.
And I could say that because I'm 75% Irish, so it's not racist.
Exactly, and I can agree because I'm the host. And, you know, I have to reply to something that's said. I can't just, like, be in silence staring at the mic.
I might do you good once in a while to shut up. But...
No. I'm pulling the producer card on that one. I am going to talk. So Titus Welliver inadvertently has, you know, made a whole bunch of great quotable quotes that will probably be cited by people trying to make comedic reviews of this movie for months to come. If they actually kept up with any of this. But Seth, so you've seen Titus Welliver's previous work. Are you amped to see this guy in the Transformers film franchise?
Well, he's a good enough actor to make me think he was Irish, so
yeah,
he's got that going for him.
What if he convinces you he's Chinese in this movie?
Then I'll be super blown away.
Yeah.
Then give him an Oscar.
Oh man, an actor getting an Oscar from Transformers?
That'd be amazing.
That'd be so cool.
It would never happen.
Nope.
Especially if Leonardo DiCaprio was in it.
And two of the first three replies to this news item both use the phrase backtrack. So I guess that's...
Isn't there a Transformer named Backtrack?
I thought so. And
if
neither
there isn't, there should be.
Neither of them are citing a Transformer called Backtrack, so I'm not impressed.
That'd be awesome if he was the voice of Backtrack. And then he had to take back his statement, so Backtrack was backtracking.
There's also a great reply here that's... I'm going to quote this. It says, is it plain? It's Starscream? Nope, there goes some hope for the Transformers movie. That's a great reply.
So not having Starscream.
Or a plane. Titus Welliver is neither a plane nor Starscream.
Okay.
And that's left someone pretty upset.
Was he Starscream before?
Nope.
Okay.
I like the question, is it plain, at the beginning, like P-L-A-N-E. Anyway. Transformers is something that's happening. But we're going to move away from that, perhaps, and go into some new picks. Unless, Seth, if you got some hot, fresh Transformers 4 pictures to share with us, you've got the floor.
When you guys were talking about the Toy Fair stuff, you kind of got into some... spoiler territory in regards to Galvatron.
Oh, we gave ample yelling, didn't we?
Yeah. No, I'm not upset about it or anything.
Okay, I thought you were about to go like...
No, but, like, wasn't there also some sort of spoilerish plot stuff that got revealed a while back that humans were building their own Transformers?
Indeed.
And now it sounds like Galvatron is the result of that, so...
Given
the bad of the movie... Yeah, so now... The big bad of the movie is, like, a human creation.
Mm-hmm.
It might be an interesting twist on that whole thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm definitely more interested in that situation than just like, oh, Megatron wasn't dead after all. Yeah. Here we go again.
He got up. He put his head back on.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like some humans got a hold of what was left of Megatron. I was like, well, build something new.
Why don't we just stick the spine back in the socket and put all the connections back together and see what happens?
We are Unicron. Oh, no. What if there's a company called Unicron Corporation and they're the ones that build Galvatron?
I don't like that idea. I don't like that idea. You know what? That also reminded me. I forgot to ask you this because I didn't put a link on the topic, so I shot right past it. You want to talk a little bit about some Toy Fair stuff?
Let's talk a little bit about Toy Fair. Yeah, you guys hammered the topic last week.
Yep.
So just a couple quick comments. I think they're doing some interesting stuff with the Dinobots.
Mm-hmm.
Having them be sort of like these, like different types, like having different aesthetics. Like, weren't you guys saying Triceratops dude is like more like a French jouster? Wasn't that?
Yeah, he had the helmet.
He has a
jouster helmet, and he has like lances, and you know he's a Triceratops.
So. Yeah. So I think that's an interesting concept.
Hmm.
And then the assurance that all the Dinobots transform at least once. Like, my guess is going to be they show up in robot mode and then they turn into dinosaurs and then they're dinosaurs for the rest of the movie. That's going to be my guess.
I was actually starting to think, like, what if they just try to recapture, like, it wouldn't work that well, but what if they try to recapture the fire of that, you know, the scene in the first 07 movie when all the Autobots, like, the big circular shot in the alley and they're all transforming, except they do that with nothing but dinosaurs?
But in the first movie with the Autobots, there were a bunch of cars and then they turned into robots and that was the big huge reveal.
Yeah, this a bunch of giant dinosaurs.
Yeah, if they were dinosaurs and then they turned into robots, it's like, oh, now they're less awesome. So it would have to be the other way around. Like they're hanging around as robots, and then the moviegoers who don't pay attention to nothing. Are just like, I wonder what kind of cars they turn into. And then the big moment is them turning into dinosaurs, and then viewers in the movie going like, what?
Some guy in the back row is like, that's sick! Oh!
What? Are you for real? That's nuts. I'm not upset about Acid Storm. You guys seem kind of bummed that it wasn't Skywarp or Thundercracker or whatever.
Oh, I don't really care, but I just don't. I went from thinking Acid Storm was a really great left field thing to kind of going like, man, Acid Storm. Eh. I don't know.
Let's see. I'm just
there's a Gears.
I'm looking at Drift.
There's Legends Gears.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Big Bad put up a pre-order for Cosmos and Swerve.
Yep.
So and Tailgate. I threw a pre-order down for those two. I didn't see Tailgate.
They didn't make a big noise about it, but they put up Tailgate and Scrapnel as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I decided to skip on those guys.
Mm.
But I threw down for Swerve and Cosmos. And then it's like one of those deals where If I find them in the store first, then I'll just grab them and cancel my pre-order, save a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
But just the way things have been going lately with finding stuff, it's like, I feel defeated and broken. Just like, these are dudes that I definitely want, so I'll throw down pre-orders. And speaking of Swerve and Tailgate, or Swerve and Gears, dude on Twitter, that third-party two-pack... offered me to work out a deal for the Gears because he just wanted the Swerve.
I think you'd really like the Gears.
Yeah, I keep meaning to get back to the guy.
Just make sure he gives you both heads.
Okay.
Because it's
worth it. I got to get back to him about that.
Yeah, definitely. Like I was semi-joking, but also totally not joking when I said you really need that Gears because it's like the best Gears toy I've ever seen.
Okay. It's got to be better than that other one.
The SXS.
Yeah.
Continuously variable.
Well, the whatchamacallums. What's that third party company?
There's a couple.
They did Brawn.
Oh, iGear, the mini warriors.
Yeah, the mini warrior iGear one.
They don't exist anymore. What?
There's got to be better than that.
What toys are you talking about?
Yeah, those were a bummer.
Erased most of that from my memory.
But going through these pictures some more, Roadbuster looks rad.
Yeah.
And I'm not even that attached to Roadbuster, but he looks pretty amazing.
Apparently he's going to come with a sticker sheet like World to make the two of them more alike.
Yeah, and how there's going to be one Transformer, and like you seem pretty convinced it's going to be a Samurai Boy.
Drift.
God, I can't remember the names of anything right now.
It's all right.
That only speaks Chinese. Like, and I don't know if we brought this up on the show recently, but remember there was that cut joke from the first 07 movie that the Autobots had scanned the planet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Chinese seemed the most populous language.
So yeah, for listeners who don't know, like to expand on what Seth said, the idea was they'd show up and immediately start speaking start speaking Cantonese, and then when Sam would go like, "What are you saying?" They'd be like, "Oh, well, we checking your World Wide Web, it appeared that most of your population spoke this language. I guess we were wrong."
Yeah, it's too bad that wasn't left in the movie, and then they introduce a character that only speaks in Chinese. Because then it'd be like, oh, they're doing a callback.
Yeah. Instead, they're just like, and I don't know if he's the one that's going to do it, but
well, the fact that any character is the one that does it, as far as we know, it could be one of the Dinobots, and he has one line.
Yeah.
And then like Grimlock's like, "You're speaking the wrong language, dum dum," and
backhands then that's the him. End of it.
And then like Grimlock's one line is, "You're speaking the wrong language, bar."
Well, Shane McCarthy, I got linked this by Random Factor just actually this evening. Shane McCarthy on his, I guess, blog, it's like S-Mac Talk or whatever, started talking about movie Drift because he's one of the guys who helped create Drift along with a couple of artists. He was getting all upset because he's like, "I can't believe this Drift has a yellow face and might speak Chinese." The thing is, Drift, I think, doesn't have a yellow face. He has a gold face, but it's pretty easy to go like, "That's..."
Right.
And it's like, it's really obviously gold. It's meant to be ornamental. I think flipping out about that is the wrong thing to flip out about. And I'm a little bit wigged out that, there's all this talk now about him having a yellow face, and everyone seems to have...
Oh, he's upset about the yellow face because that's like, because...
He Asians might be, yellow. The thing that he missed...
I didn't catch that at first because I'm not a racist.
The thing that everyone missed is that the Drift toy has slanty eyes on the head sculpt.
Well, I mean,
and I'm like, if you're gonna flip out about anything, it's the slanty eyes.
Well, I'm looking at the picture of it, and it is very obviously sculpted after a samurai helmet and battle mask. So it should look Japanese. Now, if he's also the character that only speaks Chinese, then you could like make jokes of, China and Japan are different countries.
And for the record, I hope that happens, because that would be really funny.
Right, but, I mean, if you're going to go this hard at making him look like a samurai, then I don't really have a problem with the face looking Japanese, because it's clearly meant to resemble a Japanese war mask.
Yeah, and also, it's gold. That's a different color than I don't know. If this really becomes the next Skids Mudflap argument, the yellow face as opposed to anything else, that's gonna make me shake my head a bunch, because that's just clearly missing other things to be offended by.
Meanwhile, Skybite has a very yellow face.
And I am offended. I'm not offended.
Skybite looks pretty cool. I'm just not that attached to the character.
Yeah.
But it looks like they did a pretty amazing job.
That is a toy made for fans of... I'd almost say made for fans of the dub version of the character, more so even. Because that's who I think the louder fan base is. I love the curvature on that shark mode. Every time I look at it, it makes me smile. That's a really strong artistic direction.
Well, wasn't the original shark Didn't it have a bend to it?
The original shark kind of had a backwards bend, if I recall correctly, or a sideways one. This one is like more
I think it was sideways.
Yeah. This
like
one,
it was turning.
This one bending forward is like right out of one of the last scenes of the show. So it's very poignant.
Yeah, I just don't think there's much to get upset about, because the original wasn't like a straight torpedo either.
No.
Skipping past this gray semi-truck. Skipping past Dinobots.
This gray semi-truck is keeping it all nice and nebulous. This point.
Yeah, like, you guys talked about the Optimus Prime. That was the flat-nose truck, the evasion mode or whatever. And I think Aaron nailed it. Like, my guess is, like, if we see this flat-nose truck in the movie, it's going to be like Optimus is trying to make an escape, like bad guys are chasing him. He like goes around a corner, scans a different truck, changes his alt mode. They pass him by, and then he goes about his business.
And they do the big reveal, and someone in the crowd goes like, "I had that toy."
Yeah. It's just like, because didn't they say that they're like, this is like years later and the Autobots are more in hiding and not so open in public as they were.
Something like that, yeah. Like they are less upfront. It's like everyone went into hiding after Chicago.
I agree with what you guys said about Hound. Should have been Bulkhead.
He literally looks like Bulkhead. Yeah.
I do not like the way they're doing hair/facial hair. In the Transformer movies, like, all the characters that have had, like, some sort of facial hair or head hair, I don't like how they implement that.
I bet you he's gonna spit, too. It's like straight up like robot saliva.
Tobacco.
Yeah.
Like a chewing tobacco kind of thing.
Yeah, it'll get gunked in his beard, and he'll just start talking, and his beard will start spraying spit everywhere, too.
Do we know who the voice is going to be for Hound?
Not at all,
like, his one line, because most Transformer characters only get one line. Or they're just spouting off catchphrases like Optimus Prime.
I'm hoping that he is just, I don't know. I don't know anything about Duck Dynasty, so I can't make any, aside from, you know, headlines. I haven't ever watched
it. My assumption would be Arlie Emery.
Oh, that would be cool.
And then he'd be like, "What is your major malfunction?" And then that's his one line.
Yeah. Well, Hound's going to have a cigar, and it's going to be a bullet.
All right.
He's chews on a bullet all the time.
Why wouldn't you?
And then knowing, like, if they do violence like they did in the last movie, he'll just chew on the bullet a bunch. It'll shoot, you know, blow a hole through the back of his head. He'll fall down dead. His head will separate from his body and roll away.
Yeah, that sounds like good time. I'm stoked Master B Scrimlock's coming back around because I need three.
Yep.
I'm so glad I already have it twice, so when I never see it at Toys R Us, then I'm not going to worry about it. I actually found that American release at Toys R Us. I actually found it. This was before you never saw them in real life.
I am still astounded at the aftermarket price that commanded. Like the American one.
Uh-huh.
Crazy.
No, I picked it up off a shelf and was like, all right.
I guess I'll get this.
No, I was more like, all right.
Yeah!
Hell yeah, boy.
Smack a kid out of the way.
Rat Trap looks like he could use a couple paint apps on his face.
I can't remember what he looked like anymore. I have to look at him.
It just looked like his whole face was one color. And it looked like he could use some paint apps for his teeth or something.
As long as it's not yellow.
I kind of agree with you about the VAC metal red on Skyfire.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that upsetting. But if it wasn't metallic, then I wouldn't have to worry about it chipping or anything.
Yeah, I'm getting over that. Like, it's like, I don't like it now, but it's not making me annoyed as much anymore. I mean, a lot of people have made the very good case that most VAC metal done in the last like 5 or 6 years is actually not, you know, crumbled to dust like in the Beast era. So
You know, when we talked about this figure a couple episodes ago, and we were not doubting its reality.
Yeah. I
was really looking forward to it, and I'm still looking forward to it. I think it looks rad.
Yeah.
That's like, out of all these Toy Fair pictures, that's the figure that I'm most impressed with.
And back metal aside, if I take his accessories off, he just looks like a sick jet. Like, I know it's the hand-painted one, but if they can get the red to look that bold over the white in production...
Yeah.
He's just gorgeous.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. And also Wingblade.
Yeah.
Is in there. I'm just clicking through the highlight pictures.
That's my go-to, because it catches... You know, it doesn't get everything, but it's a lot of the best close-up type stuff.
Yeah. So... That's the circuit. I clicked all the way through.
You got to all the weird Vinyl Optimus Primes?
Yeah, I mean, well, those aren't actually things that are coming out, are they?
No, I think those were all DIYs that people had made.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's like the Boba Fett one, and that's getting into a couple different licenses, and sure, Hasbro has Star Wars and Transformers, but now Disney's involved, and...
What a mess.
The Tiki one was awesome, though.
Yeah, so that looks like it has actually, like, freshly sculpted pieces on it.
Oh, it has to. The face has to be a different sculpt.
Yeah, that's cool. That's someone going the extra mile.
Yeah, but, I mean, just all the wood grain paint job and everything, it's really cool looking.
Yeah.
So I guess that's all I gotta say about that.
All right. And you got you're gonna go for a no comment on all the flip changey stuff that is ruining the toy line, because that's all we're ever gonna get, except we're not.
Yeah, I'll get upset later.
All right, because people are there are listeners who are waiting for you. You know, they're like, hey, where's our rage about these dumb kids toys? Why isn't he flipping out? I don't know. I better go to another podcast. We're hemorrhaging listeners.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'll leave the unchecked rage and aggression in Aaron's hands.
All right.
Because he's a maniac.
Ugh, yeah.
He's always flipping tables and going bananas.
I had to mute the Skype call a whole bunch of times last week. He was just getting so worked up.
He's always like, Lego.
Pantones. All right. So that's some Toy Fair talk. Let's do some new picture pick talk now. And Seth, I'm going to actually ask you to go first again, because I really want to talk about what you're going to talk about.
Yeah. Where did I leave? Mech Ideas, Techno Toon Titans, Bluster, and Trench. So these go up for pre-order about a week ago. On Big Bad Toy Store.
Oh, really?
And, well, I get the pre-order alert email. It's like, you've shown interest in similar things, so here's a thing of this. And I went, And I went straight to Big Bad Toy Store that morning, and I put in my pre-order. And then there was a bunch of talk about it, and, like, I teased Derek J. Wyatt about it, because, like, oh, your IP, And
I liked his reply of, yeah, the IP I don't actually own anymore.
And then I like go back to the BBTS listing to look at the pictures again, and they have it marked as sold out. I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad I didn't wait on that, because it was like the next day.
Yeah.
Then I'm talking the day after that, I'm talking to somebody else about it on Twitter, and people start jumping in, going like, yeah, about that, apparently it's canceled.
Yeah, so that the night before was when that all went down. And I'm guessing you were away from Twitter at the time.
Yeah.
Because that was a bit of a mess, because literally minutes after some of us, you know, were getting back from work and go like, oh, wow, they sold out pre-orders. That must be a great sign. Literally minutes later, the announcement went up of like, hey, it's actually going... It wasn't actually... They never said canceled. It was... the only cancellation was Big Bad Toy Store canceling their pre-order of stock, thus the project having to go on to hiatus with no definite date of release. So that was a bummer. And I got kind of bummed out because it was a two-step thing. Number one, of course, I love animated a lot, so that really bummed me out. But number two, it was like it was on my mind that day of how, like, at the moment, this project has a lot of weight on it for me because it's a non-G1 oriented, you know, indie Transformer project that could actually go forward and do really well. And for it to not even finish, like, I think it was only up for about 36 hours total. Going by a number I saw someone sharing. I can't remember, though. It bummed me out a lot, and I was like, man, this is everything that's wrong with everything, with the buyer market, blah, blah, blah. But we have, like, full details now on what's going on, and I was really happy that actually we're recording now that we have, like, a more set happy ending, because I was just going to end up going on some kind of diatribe about the buyer ship. I felt really bad, because some people, I think, I, like, inadvertently guilt-tripped, and I had to tell them that individual taste isn't what I'm talking about, because if those, you know, like, six people did pre-order these, that wouldn't probably have made any difference. It's the hundreds that you gotta think of. But, the full story we got from Sino Kibble, who's been posting like a madman, because he's super bummed about this, he was spearheading this project to a degree, is that Big Bad Toy Store offered to buy the whole stock so they could have it as an exclusive to their web shop, which is a thing they do. And apparently the day one pre-order sales were not up to par whatsoever, and apparently that is a thing that they pay attention to. And due to the apparently low number of day one pre-orders, they decided to drop the thing, which, to me, I find that notion a little bit crazy, because this is not a AAA video game, this is not a mass-produced, televised commercial type of project. This is very niche. This is niche in a niche. I can't believe that they were looking at a day one pre-order window for this, but that aside, the project is only on hiatus right now, and apparently due to the outcry of its Big Bad Toy Store canceling their pre-order of stock, the powers that be at Mech Ideas have promised that within 2 weeks they're going to make an announcement about what they're doing with this. The rumors going around right now from people who may or may not be in the know is that they're looking to streamline the production of these even more, so they will cost less than what they cost at Big Bad Toy Store for the end user. And
I already thought the price was fine.
And I did too.
It was like 60-something for the two of them.
I thought the price was fine too, but I had more than one person tell me, 60 for something that small. And I was like, well, all right.
Well, it's also two of them.
Yeah.
For third-party stuff, like, that seemed all right to me.
A lot of people were super hung, that I talked to anyway, were super hung up on their being smaller than the other Mech Ideas toys, but it was already, as far as I know, knowledge that had been shared that these two guys actually had a much higher parts count than the Twin Twist and Top Spin, because they have, like, the whole thing of retractable legs and stuff. Apparently they're looking into not only that, but also figuring out a far better way of getting word out and publicity out about these for when they do open a pre-order, wherever they do. So they are not doomed. The people working on them are very intent on trying to get them out somehow. They are trying to rally. Sino Kibble has created a hashtag. It's a little bit of a kludgy hashtag. And he's getting word out. He's hoping that we can, you know, the fans can spread word as well. A lot of the fans are spreading word. So it's not a doomed project anymore as of right now, which is something I'm happy to say before, you know, we start recording this episode.
Well, it's silly of Big Bad trying to corner the whole market and pre-order all of them out and then killing the whole thing. Like, I don't know why this can't be available on multiple sites.
Apparently, TF Source, so Hirschtecon replied to me and tagged TF Source talking about how he was waiting for it to go up there. TF Source on Twitter said, and this was a public tweet, so I feel I'm able to share it. They said, yeah, we contacted Mech Ideas asking if we could help promote the item, and we're told it was a Big Bad Toy Store exclusive. When Big Bad put up the pre-order, as far as I know, nobody on the internet knew it was an exclusive to them, so a number of people were waiting to see how much it was going to cost elsewhere.
Which, I don't remember seeing anything on that page that said exclusive.
Yeah, and a lot of people straight up said they didn't pre-order because they were waiting to see if they could get it from somewhere more local to them, like Chemung Mung or Kapow. Or Automaton, even. So, There was definitely a large mishandling of communication. Asino Kibble, being a gentleman that he is, has fallen on the sword, I think, about three times now in the last 24 hours, basically saying the buck stops with him and it is on him to take responsibility for anything that went wrong in the planning of these things. And dude is a gentleman, and I'm not gonna harangue him or say that he's, you know, covering for anyone else. He'd take his word for what it is. But yeah, as far as the situation, just speaking as a buyer, once I found out it was a Big Bad Toy Store exclusive, my aggro immediately just went to like, well, this whole situation is completely janked, because there was like a 36-hour window, and no one knew that they had to click that one button to show support to the thing.
Yeah,
and there are people who will not order from some retailers. So
yeah, I'm disappointed in Big Bad's part in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's how they do business, you know, and it is something that has happened in big box retail. Walmart does this all the time, I've found out. Not so much canceling lines, but, you know, greatly affecting their success after getting exclusivity. They did that to the Real Steel toy line by Jack's Pacific, and they almost caused the Pacific Rim toy line by Nika to get canned because they not only got exclusivity, they convinced Nika to make the toys for an $8 price point, you know, much simpler and smaller, and then halfway through development, they said, actually, we don't want them anymore, and Nika were already in the middle of developing toys. So Nika kind of got boned pretty hard there. And then, to Nika's fault, they didn't make that very clear until after a lot of people had bought the first two waves of those toys and said, what the hell is going on with these? So it's something that happens in big retail more than once. It's a phenomena, but I agree with you. It is super dumb that was any kind of a factor in a small time indie release like this. It's ludicrous. And I mean, it's animated. Animated is a great aesthetic. I think it's a great show. It certainly is not a universally loved part of Transformers, and I don't know what kind of numbers they were hoping for, but yeah.
Well, I was one, if nothing else.
Yeah, I was one too. There were,
and it's a funny idea. I mean, if nothing else, to turn Huffer and Pipes into Mario and Luigi.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is there are also a lot of people who specifically said, well, if it wasn't those two designs, I would have pre-ordered. A lot of people have been calling out the choice to do animated Huffer and Pipes first as a huge mistake. Reasons were given as to why those characters were chosen.
I think it's a huge hit. I'm stoked for any. I love Huffer.
No,
give me
I
more
know.
Huffers. All the Huffers. I'll just keep huffing.
There are some people who were very vocal saying they wanted the Constructicons or they wanted people who had speaking roles in the show.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say they're wrong, but I think that given that these toys got pushed back nearly a year just to get the animated aesthetic down, I'd rather that a more jokey kind of side pair of designs be done first before moving on to what I would consider the important ones. Like, get the aesthetic set before you try to do, you know, the Constructicons who potentially may combine in some way.
Yeah, and work out any production kinks.
Yeah.
But, you know, people don't always look at the big picture. They want what they want when they want it, and they want it yesterday.
And I'm not going to fault anyone who didn't order these because they don't like the designs. Because, of course, don't order something if you don't like how it looks. Because that's silly. Unless you have lots of money, and you can just, you know, support things that way. But I mean, it also at the same time, what you just said, I retweeted someone who said that, I forgot who now. It was a very good quote. Cause there is a thing about the third party, the greater, you know, the majority market in third party, just as a blob, as a generality, there is a really kind of ugly attitude of like, I want you to make what I want for me rather than I want to buy the cool thing that you're making. You know, like, why, like, this is a very overarching tone in that sub-forum of, why aren't you doing what I want, like, right now? And it's, I think it's kind of gross, and I think it's really contributing to preventing this whole scene from becoming anything other than, we're just going to make a bunch of Transformers brand characters, but that's just right now. Maybe it'll all get better. And maybe I'm a little bit too artsy-fartsy in how I'm looking at it, but that's how I feel right now. I got a Skype message. All I'm going to say is yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really hope these still I mean, it sounds like they are going to get out somewhere, some way.
Yeah.
Because I still want them. Even if I gotta go to a web store that I don't trust very well because of some credit card issues in the past, but...
General Zhao just shows up as the sole retailer. That's not gonna happen.
Yeah. But, I mean, they look cool, and I was looking forward to them, so...
Far as I've heard, there's nothing to worry about right now.
Right now.
Oh, and
I want what I want when I want, and I want it now.
Some people have said, why don't you just do a Kickstarter? And the point has been made, and I think it's pretty true, that you can't really do a Kickstarter for something where you don't have any kind of ownership of the IP that you are clearly using as the basis of your items that you're kickstarting.
Yeah, and if anything, you could argue they're infringing two IPs.
Yeah. Well, I came up with a crazy chemtrails theory about this just because I figured, what else am I going to do tonight? I'm full of Twitter energy and everyone's all aggro. And I was trying to de-aggro because I felt kind of bad after getting all like, I can't believe this ugly tone in the blah, blah, blah. And I was like, man, I'm just making people feel bad. So I was like, what if, so Nintendo, right? They announced that, oh man, Nintendo's already coming for me. They announced that they're going to start merchandising their IP more. And then before that, it came out that Bandai's doing an SH Figure Arts Mario figure. And so I was like, what if Nintendo, you know, just dip in their toes into all this, intellectual property merchandising stuff, and remembering the ways that they've not known really how to deal with YouTube and live streaming in the last couple years, what if they saw these and went like, that's a not our product, and like flipped out on Big Bad and went like, you know, you can't sell that or Nintendo will come after you. That's totally not what happened, but that was a little story I made up in my head.
Well, I'm continually impressed that Twitch Plays Pokemon has been happening for almost two solid weeks now, and Nintendo hasn't done anything to stop it.
I think they learned after... I think it was... I want to say it was when they quashed Evo's ability to stream Smash Brothers. That must have been the clincher for them to realize they were behind the times.
Yeah, and this is the original Pokemon. It's not like they're doing X and Y.
Yeah, didn't they... Twitch won, didn't they? They actually beat the Elite Four this evening.
Is it over now?
Well, I saw someone tweeting...
I knew they were getting close to the Elite Four, or they were working on the Elite Four.
I think they...
Because I saw a post that they defeated, like, a level 63 Dragonite with a level 32 Viamoth.
I don't even understand how they got to the Elite Four. I mean, I haven't even really been in that Twitch room. I've been just, like, watching from afar.
Yeah, I've only been watching through, like, Reddit posts and screenshots.
I watched some YouTube videos of, like, a day's recap at 3,000% speed. Uh-huh. It's super, actually, my favorite thing about this whole thing has been the fan art of this Pokemon trainer. Like, this demented, like, 60 million voices in his head Pokemon trainer just wandering around, blinking eyes separately, waving helix shells at people randomly. But yeah, apparently they beat the Elite Four tonight. That's kind of astounding.
Yeah. Well, they kind of did a bunch of talking about it on Giant Bomb last week.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it originally started, it was just completely majority rules. Like, whoever was typing the most instructions the fastest was what drove Red, the Ash character. And then after a few days, the guy that was responsible for setting it up, and apparently he stayed anonymous the entire time.
Yeah, very, commendable.
He altered the code, so now the game is able to switch between what was dubbed Anarchy Mode, which is how it started, and Democracy Mode, where now movements were based more on a majority vote.
Yeah.
And the game would switch between Anarchy and Democracy, and I was seeing like all these posts on Reddit and Imgur of like we need democracy for this part, and like, here, let me explain this to you. And if we're going to get through here, like, we can't get through the Safari Zone with Anarchy because we're going to use up all our footsteps, and then like, Wally America sleeps and Australia is in charge, then America wakes up and they're like, Australia, what the hell are you doing? You had all day and you haven't gotten anywhere. And it's like, we were stuck in anarchy. And then Europe's like, why is it only America and Australia? We're playing too. And everyone's getting upset.
One of my favorite parts of that is hearing about the people who tried to become the leader voices in the head of that Pokemon trainer, like trying to rally people. And I'm like, you're not going to rally anyone. There's too much chaos in there.
Yeah, and trolls intentionally trying to screw stuff up and release Pokemon. And
Anarchy 9, Start 9.
Yeah, Start 9.
Start 9.
And they get to a PC and then they start releasing popular Pokemon. And so yeah, the fact that it looks like they're going to finish this game is mind-boggling.
Yeah, Nintendo's finally... well, I shouldn't say that. They're taking another step towards understanding the internet.
Well, I saw somebody on Twitter today, crack-wise, that Twitch Plays Pokemon is Nintendo's most successful online multiplayer game ever.
Yep. I'm also so glad that no one... well, maybe they did and I just didn't hear about it, but it seems like this original run of Twitch Plays Pokemon, no one tried to make some kind of, like, severe, I'm a make millions from this monetizing scheme out of it.
Well, supposedly a whole bunch of similar things have all cropped up.
Oh, yeah.
But like, very little attention's being paid to any of them.
Well, I mean, most of the population of the planet were doing the Pokemon one. They can't do multiples.
Yeah. Or they just look at the others and be like, well, that's... why am I going to jump over to this other thing when I could be part of the original thing?
This ain't G1.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. Bluster and Trench. Hopefully they will happen. I would really like to speak to Sino Kibble in a recorded fashion about them if I can. I know that he's one of the third-party type folks who is a lot less secretive about parts of his identity, so hopefully that's something we could set up. And I also am, like, I don't know, I've been kind of heavy-handed about it in the way I type on Twitter. I am trying so hard to get third party out of my vocabulary.
Yeah,
like, I really want to...
I think we're kind of stuck with it.
I really want to stop saying it, because I think, like, every year it's becoming a dumber and dumber thing to say. Like, and whenever people, man, like... still, when people shorten it to, yo, what do you think the 3P scene is like? I'm like, oh, for Christ's sake. Like, this is gross. It's gross and kludgy.
I think we're stuck with it.
I agree with you, but I don't know. I really, really want to try to...
well, it's the thing that everybody knows it as. If you start using a different phrase, then people go, what? And you go, third party, and they go, well, why did you say that in the first place?
Because it's terrible.
I mean, I agree. It's not a good name for it, but it's what we got.
It's so bad. And speaking of how it's so bad, my own new picture picks another third-party item. And this was actually very much a companion news item to Mech Ideas' Bluster and Trench. This is Mech Ideas' Mach 5 Gauntlet. So Gauntlet was a project by a company called Mach 5. They basically were making Iron Fist from the comic books. And they tried to take on some user and some buyer feedback. And they got... Mach 5, I think, got a little overly... They took a lot of negative feedback a little way too close to heart. And they took too much feedback at once, almost. And I think they kind of... in terms of feedback, they got themselves a little bit down a hole. And then, apparently... the reason why Mach 5 canceled the project in part is also because it was a Big Bad Toy Store thing, and they did not get enough pre-orders, and so Big Bad Toy Store didn't want to carry it anymore. So it was kind of a dark joke that day that the Mach 5 project was getting resurrected by Mech Ideas, while Mech Ideas' own project was quote-unquote getting Mach 5'd. But Mech Ideas are working with the Mach 5 guys to make this thing happen. It's going to be part of the Demolition Crew series. So it's going to be similar to Apex and Geminis. And they're staying very true to Mach 5's design. I have a feeling they're just going to tweak it slightly in terms of how the joints work and everything. And it'll be made at the production line that does Mech Ideas and Mastermind stuff, which means the plastic should be gorgeous. And I'm really happy about this, because I loved the idea of this project. It was a really cool, just stocky, characterful little dude. And I thought the way that it got canceled was a super bummer, because I felt like Mach 5 just got beaten down trying to work with their buyer ship. And I think they were trying to work with the buyer ship way too much. It was another example of how taking feedback can backfire on you, I think. And I think this is a really good bit of news. And I hope it really, it doesn't sound like this is being canceled at all. And it's going to also be at a lower price than the Mach 5 offering was going to be at. So I'm excited about this one. Seth, I don't know if you kept up with the Mach 5 end of this, but taking a look at Mech Ideas pictures of the prototype of this little guy, what do you think?
I mean, he looks cool. I'm not, I read Last Stand of the Wreckers, so, but I'm not so in love with it that I need all the Wreckers. But I mean, again, it's like, stop it, Big Bad Toy Store. Like, I love those guys, but you got to stop wrecking these releases and stop trying to claim them as your own exclusive. I mean, that's a business move, but if you're going to end, if it's going to keep ending with you being like, oh, we didn't sell enough because you guys are still trying to get rid of all those friggin' Piranacons or Seacons or whatever version that was, where I got ripped off. I paid full price for those things, and I think they were on sale recently for like $10 or whatever. Just because you guys overreached on that deal doesn't mean you should just be killing everything else that comes along.
Yeah, the business decision to try to become the sole U.S. retailer for a third-party item, like business-wise, on paper, that makes total sense to me. But I think that this whole scene is still too small to be able to leverage that more times than it's going to backfire on you, as we've just been talking about how it's backfired. But either the project getting canceled because Big Bad cancels the pre-order, or Big Bad getting stuck with so much stock of it that they have to clearance it all over the course of like 2 years. Business-wise, it's a great idea, but I think it's too big an idea for what the scene really is right now. And the more, like, if this keeps happening, it's also going to become a very gross idea to a lot of buyers who might start, waving it around as a reason why they're going to be angry about something. Like, it's the whole thing is, any positive end of it, I think, is really getting bled out.
On one hand, it could start setting up a situation where the buyers are going to not trust Big Bad anymore. And that's going to hurt their business way more. If it starts becoming this narrative that, like, oh, don't order from them because they might cancel it.
Which sucks, because not ordering from them is contributing to canceling it, too.
Yeah, but what I mean is it could get out into other things where it's not exclusive to them.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if my choice is I could order it from TF Source or Big Bad, and I've had all these previous orders canceled by Big Bad, then I'm just going to stay with TF Source.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I'm going to go with them. I mean, it's dangerous. They're treading some thin ice.
And
they could end up hurting themselves more than there's any, plausible benefit.
And it's now public knowledge that Robot Kingdom are the sole retailer for a couple of companies, I believe Perfect Effect and TFC Toys. And, I mean, once that news got out and, people were feeling more comfortable to talk about it, it was not something anyone ever seemed to talk about with any kind of fondness. It seemed to more so complicate things just for the whole thought process of why these things cost what they do. Like, it only adds to cost when there is a sole retailer. At the same time, a sole retailer can also save a project by putting their full support behind it and possibly putting some money in on it themselves. So It's a very multifaceted thing. It's like one of the least black and white situations in business, especially in retail business. But I think it's too big a concept for third party right now.
Yeah.
Way too big a concept. Because half these companies are like three people, It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit together at all. It would be like trying to... The best example I can think of would be like taking, you know, the indie game boom that's been going on for the last year or two or three. Like, imagine if some of those things were turning into, like, actually, you know what? That's an even weirder example, because a lot of people only use Steam to buy computer games.
Well, and there's already indie games that have been exclusive to platforms. Like, there's some indie games that are, you could really only get on Sony. And there's been some that were on Xbox either first or exclusively. And then others that are only available on PC via Steam or their own sites or what have you. So, I mean, that's already a scene that's kind of lost.
And between you and me, we have successfully torn down my example I was trying to make before I actually completed the thought. We worked as a team.
Yay, high five.
Yahoo! Anyway, Mach 5's Gauntlet, it looks like it's getting revived, and that's, to me, only good news, because Mach 5 had a lot of heart in what they were doing, and I felt they were really crushed when this thing fell apart, and I'm happy for them. Quite a bit. And I had one other new pick I really just want to throw in here, because it's, I guess, worth talking about. Shogo Hasui, the Masterpiece guy right now, in Figure O magazine gave a short interview, and he talked a little bit about upcoming Masterpiece toys, primarily Wheeljack. And Seth, I know you're pretty into how Masterpiece is going right now.
Yeah, I am.
Well, he talked about things such as Masterpiece Wheeljack's color scheme and vehicle mode is close to the real car, but he tried to make the robot mode's color as close to the cartoon as possible. So there are some conflicting forces in there, color scheme-wise. He also said that Wheeljack's shoulder cannon can be attached to the car roof, which seems to run, you know, with the pattern of how these cars have been going. He clarified, and I'm not surprised by this, he said that Wheeljack's wings do not have to be detached when you transform him. I think if they did have to be detached, that would be pretty bad. This was something that I found really interesting, though. Thanks to Tomica, because, you know, it is now Takara Tomy, it has been for some years. Tomica is Tomy's Hot Wheels series of real vehicle-based toy cars. So thanks to Tomica, it's actually become a lot easier for Masterpiece Transformers to negotiate with car manufacturers. So when they were only Takara, you know, when they were doing Binaltech, it sounds like it was harder to talk to some car manufacturers, whereas Tomy has had relationships with them through Tomica for, like, decades. So this is actually a really good leveraging of the merger that happened, you know, years ago now. Also, apparently the sales of Masterpiece Lambor and, from Lambor through to Streak, so all five of those, were excellent. And as a result of those good sales, Smokescreen could have additional pieces, and Wheeljack could be developed without considering repurposing the mold. So, thanks to all the good sales, they're developing Wheeljack without even thinking about using his chassis for another character. Which is great, because it wouldn't have worked for any other characters, in my opinion.
Yeah. Unless they pulled out some old Diaclone color scheme.
I mean, I think that's going to happen anyway, but I'm thinking more about the long discussion of, is he going to be repurposed into Sunstreaker or something like that?
Yeah.
And that seems like that's soundly being quashed here. And the last...
I don't even know how you get Sunstreaker out of that.
Yeah, I mean, some of the shapes in terms of the chest and the feet are similar, but...
Or they both have, like, big ear things sticking off the side of their heads. Like, that's the only... That's the closest thing I could think of, like, personally.
I could see it happening, because they both, like, their legs and their chests are very similar. So that could be a thing, but I'm happy that that doesn't seem to be what's happening. And the last bullet point is that the first three real vehicle masterpieces were meant to be supercars. And I think that's just going back to Diaclone information. But, I thought those were some good bullet points. Clearly, Hasui is like a friggin' rock star with these things right now. And I'm hoping he passes a lot of this energy on to... now I forgot his name. The guy who's taking over who did the older Masterpiece toys. We did a whole talk about it a while ago.
Yeah.
But Seth, hearing these bullet points, are you feeling pretty confident about Wheeljack and Masterpiece in general?
I mean, I didn't have any reason to not be confident in Wheeljack.
I know.
So... Yeah, no, if anything, where the questions come up in Masterpiece is when they do switch guys, and if the new guy kind of keeps the vibe going, but until then, I don't think there's anything to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so glad that these guys are all, like, you know, they are all part of the same team. They all worked in the same office, and Hasui will still be there to talk to the guy working on these. So I'm, man, like, they really figured out Masterpiece, and I'm so happy. But that also concludes our new picture picks. So, Seth, let's talk about BotCon 2014's opening guest salvo. That's what I called it in the topic list.
Okay.
So, BotCon's Twitter account said we have the hashtag best guest list. So, hashtag get ready for hashtag more awesome guest announcements as they announced their first.
Even though we already know, like, all the big guns are at some other con that weekend.
Ignoring that. They announced their first three guests. They're all G1 guests. The big one for me, because I actually really would love to see her at a convention, because I've actually never met her, is Susan Blue, best known as RC in G1 and animated. She's also a voiceover director now, which means she can offer, in terms of Q&A, I think a really valuable perspective that otherwise you can only really get from folks like Wally Burr at BotCons. She's like Wally Burr, Susan Blue, and Andrea Romano are the only three voice directors I really know by name, so it'd be really cool to meet, you know, another part of the trinity in my head. Also coming to BotCon are Hal Rail. I missed the L there. Hal Rail, who played Snarl in G1, and making a return, one of my favorite convention guests in general, Michael McConaughey, who played G1 Trax and also was a writer/director on Transformers Robots in Disguise, and he is full of amazing stories about how much of a, like, not even by the seat of their pants, by the flesh of their buttocks production Robots in Disguise's dub was. He's a really fun guy to talk to.
He was one of the first voice actors we ever got any recording from.
Yeah.
When I got all those bumpers that one year.
Yeah.
And he was part of one of the greatest episodes nobody's ever going to get to hear.
Yep, the one with the... I mean, we've talked about it. Like, that was legitimate, like, phantoms in the machine screwing up that recording. Like, I don't even know what, like, you know, for those listeners who were not around, like, what was it now, 2 years ago when that happened? We recorded with him and played the Baroness. Now I forgot her real name.
I'll forget. I'll remember her name, like, 5 minutes after is way too late.
I've begun the process, but we recorded with the two of them, and after the recording, we discovered that, and this has never happened again before or after this event, some kind of parabolic anti-wave was recorded at the same time as we recorded with the two of them, which completely nullified the waveform of their audio. So it was just a garbled mess. I passed it along to a friend of Aaron's who is like a working government tier sound engineer who said that even with all his equipment, he'd have to start accessing stuff that would cost like hundreds of dollars per hour to use to even start to try to repair it. So that is, I think, the only WTF recording we have ever just put to bed. And like just put in a coffin and said this can't come out because it's broken.
And I felt terrible sending Michael the email.
Yep.
Explaining what happened and apologizing. Because I mean, they were so generous with their time, and then nothing came of it, and I was, oh, it was terrible.
To this, like, and I always think about it in the back of my head, even if we'd done a test recording, like, we did a test recording right afterwards, and everything worked fine. To this day, I have no idea what on earth happened to the equipment. And ever since then, I not only do a test recording, I try to even have, like, a backup device recording externally if I can. That was a terrible experience for every human being involved. The recording was fun, I remember that. But the aftermath was...
That part was great.
Yeah. So if I make it to BotCon, I will try to successfully record some stuff with these people. This is the one in Pasadena, California. And yeah, that's really all I got. It's guest announcements. I think the real exciting one, and not to diminish the other two, but the most exciting thing here is Susan Blue, because she, you know, she's gone through some stuff. And she's been around, and she's moved up in the job listings. You know, she's a director now. And I think she could really offer some cool insight at this point in her career. So, I don't know. Seth, how do you feel about these guest announcements?
I'm fine.
Yeah. I mean, not offended, not angry.
I don't know why I would be.
I don't either.
But yeah, I would say Sue Blue is like the headliner of that set.
Yeah.
Just because she seems like the biggest name in the group. she was in Gem.
Yeah.
She did a voice in Gem. And other stuff.
She's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no, she's a big-time voice actress.
Yeah. And Michael McConaughey is a consummate gentleman. And I don't know anything about Hal Rail.
No, neither do I.
Like, I literally don't know anything. Okay, he was
I'm sure he's cool.
He looks, so his IMDb picture, he looks like a friendly guy. He was a voice in the Toxic Crusaders cartoon, I think. Yeah, and he looks like a neat dude. Nothing wrong. He was the voice of the Predator in Predator 2. Uncredited.
That's a shame.
I forgot what the Predator in Predator 2 said. Did it just laugh?
I can't think of any lines either. Might have made some clicking noises at one point.
Yeah. I'm actually really interested to see what this dude's like, because it's his first BotCon, and he's not a name I know very well. So, often that actually ends up, you know, resulting in meeting a very cool person. So, could be neat. Hope I can make it. Not sure yet.
I don't think I'm going to make it.
Oh.
It's so close, but just, like,
yet,
time
yet
and
so far.
Money. And, yeah, I'm putting my time and money toward Chicago.
Yeah.
So I'm shooting for that.
The October Chicago thing?
Yeah.
TFCon
Chicago.
TFCon USA.
Yeah, boy. Gotta represent.
Oh. Well, that takes us to a listener question. I actually had someone ask me if we like trashed all the listener questions. I said no, we just had a lot to talk about. So this listener question comes to us from Gamatron64, who says, "Hey, WTF and TFW dudes. With the recent release of Fans Project's Glacial Lords, it would be interesting if Fans Project and or other third parties made additional original G1 figures." This actually stemmed from a Twitter conversation that I think I was a part of back in December. What if third parties made some honest-to-God G1 figures that never got toys, like RC or Alpha Trion? Sure, both Impossible Toys and iGear made G1-styled RCs, but those were based off the animation model and had more modern articulation. I'm talking about a theoretical RC or any other character that looks, feels, and functions like a toy made in the 1980s that, when placed on G1 shelf, looks like it belongs there to the untrained eye. I'm speaking of an RC that has, like, 2 points of articulation, isn't entirely show-accurate, has cheesy stickers of wires and odd mechanical detail, may contain die-cast. Others have expressed interest in newer staple characters like Bulkhead, Lockdown, and Barricade getting retroactive G1 figures, and I would certainly love an early G1 Diaclone-style DeLorean, or maybe something rarely seen in Transformers like a garbage truck or limousine. And going from there, it's question time. Number one. What would you like to see get released in a G1 style? A character from the show or comics that never got a toy? A newer character from a later series? Something original? I'm interested to see what you would choose. If you have more than one you'd like to see, feel free to let us know. And then, just for you, Seth, in brackets, he says that you cannot pick Huffer. He's already been made in G1.
All right.
So you can't have a double G1 Huffer.
What am I going to do?
I don't know. I'm throwing you to the wolves. You're the Huffer guy. So, the idea behind this, it was a Twitter convo I really distinctly remember now, which was, like, because, Seth, you know, like, the Glacial Lords, the retro future stuff, where they were, like, making, like, new old toys, basically. And the idea was, what if, like, someone decided to just start doing that, but with, like, Transformers characters? Just, like, make new old Transformers toys. And I thought the idea was pretty cool, because, like, artistically, I love the idea of retro future, and I certainly think it's something that's worth being pursued. I'm not saying that that's better toys than, you know, like, modern posable ones, but in terms of, like, you know, an indie toy thing, I think it's actually quite interesting, especially if they properly transform. So I would love to see, actually, like, Bulkhead and Lockdown and Barricade as G1 toys, I think would be super freaking cool if they're done with the right art style, the right, you know, attitude behind them. And I have trouble thinking of something better than those three. Seth, I don't know, what would you like to see G1-ified in that way?
Well, in that regard, I think I would rather see G1-era characters that didn't get a toy, like as he mentions, RC. Like any and all the Fembots never got toys.
Yeah.
I remember back in those days thinking it was crazy that there was never Quintesson figures.
Mm-hmm.
Then, now I'm trying to find them because I'm trying to remember what they were called. This concept isn't completely this is terrible, but I'm trying to search because I know Entertainment Earth is carrying this stuff.
Oh, you mean Reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funko's Reaction stuff.
Yeah, so like Funko's doing all these like kind of Kenner Star Wars style figures.
Yeah.
And they started with Aliens, which apparently there were all these prototype figures of.
Yep.
And they never came out, but now they're going to other licenses and properties and doing other things.
And the Kenner prototypes, I believe, came from Super 7, who were like half that project. It was Super 7 Funko joint, the Alien Reaction figures.
Yeah, so this idea of doing new old figures is a thing that's going on.
Yeah.
It's not unique to the Glacial Bots.
Although at the time, because this question came from December, when we had the conversation, I think that the Funko Super 7 thing was like a one-off idea, so no one knew that Funko was going to go balls deep in this.
Well, at any rate, the idea was like in the air. It was in the zeitgeist.
The time ghost.
I only said that to make you say your thing.
I know. Bazinga.
So I don't think it's a crazy notion.
No, I think it's a really cool idea. I mean, certainly, like, even if it was just like, hey, we're gonna make the Fembots as G1 toys, I mean, that would be a great way to have it as a finite line, and then, you know, at the very end add in like DevCon to top it off. And maybe Scrounge. But, I mean, also, just in terms of just sheer artistry and imagination, it would be kind of cool seeing something like, you know, Lockdown done as a G1 toy. Like, what would he be? What part of G1 would you make his aesthetic closer to, etc.? This actually really takes us right into question number two, which is, do you think such a thing is even commercially viable? If these things existed, would they only appeal to an extremely niche group of people? Do you think something like this could succeed? Is there an audience for these, or are there only 10 guys out there who would be into these? If toys like these were made, would you buy them, or would they not be your cup of tea? He says, technically, that's a little more than two questions, I guess. Anyway, thanks for taking your time to answer my question. Keep up the good work. I think that Retro Future... This is the interesting thing. Retro Future has proven there is an audience for retro-style toys, but there was, I don't know if it was a sizable majority, but there was a loud part of Retro Future's buyer demographic who were also into them because they were not infringing on an IP, which means that, like, they would be more into this idea if we were going to the vent of stuff like a DeLorean or a garbage truck or a limousine as opposed to actual characters. I think that there is an audience for these. I think that they are a quieter audience than most of the people in the third-party sub-forum, but I would be interested to see this attempted at least once to gauge exactly what this audience is, you know, in terms of people who are okay with IP infringement and like this idea. I don't know if it would work, to be quite honest, because there were certainly a small number of very loud people to this day who go to every review of a Glacial Bots toy saying, if only these things weren't pieces of garbage! So, I don't know. Seth, what do you think?
Well, yes, it would be niche. I don't think it would be as niche as the Glacial Bots. Like, where the Glacial Bots are this old style and original, that's a bigger sell, I think, than if it was old style and RC. or Old Style and Alita 1.
Mm.
I think those would sell better. But I don't think they would sell as well as like a super articulated, super detailed, more modern, hyper advanced kind of version of RC and Alita 1 and blah blah blah.
Yeah, I mean nowadays I think the loudest people with the most money are people who want to build a classics neoclassic shelf as opposed to a G1 shelf. But
so I think they would sell.
Yeah.
Just the person, whatever company made them, would have to be going into it knowing that they weren't going to sell a lot.
Yeah.
Like, go into it knowing they were doing, like, a smaller thing for a smaller audience.
And, I mean, when Fans Project went in to do Retro Future, I know for a fact that they were entirely ready for it to backfire. Because it was such a different idea to do an under-engineered toy. As an artistic, like not as a mistake, but as an artistic statement, as an artistic design choice. I think it's really... I think it is super important that, you know, these companies be in a position where it is not outright suicide to pursue their chosen, like their desired artistry of design for a small project here and there. Like, I think it's incredibly important that they be allowed to do that and that the buyer's market not castrate them for doing so. I don't know. I really wonder, like, what level of production run would be viable for this? Like, 200 pieces, maybe? 300?
I have no idea. I don't know about the business and in those terms of what sells and how many units are made and blah, blah, blah.
That's a big-ass hole in my knowledge as far as actual hard numbers. I really hope it would work. I would love to see someone try this with the right attitude behind it. And really good production behind it. That's another thing that worked for the Glacial Lords is they were 80s toys, but they were cast in like 2013 plastic, which is a lot stronger than like 1984 plastic. And that's the big, that I think is the big engineering draw of these things. There's two sides. Number one, how do you, with reverence, make reference to 80s engineering? And number two, how do you quietly improve everything you can that's an invisible improvement that is applying modern engineering, like having stronger plastic, stronger joint designs, less fragile joint designs, etc. It's a very interesting kind of project. I hope someone does it. Anyway, Seth, you got anything else to throw in on that one?
No, I don't think so.
All right, well, thanks for the question, Gamatron64. I was there for the Twitter convo, and I think I said then that I thought the idea was badass. Unless I just said that in my head and didn't reply to anyone, which happens scarily often on Twitter nowadays. But I think it's time for an intermission.
Me too.
So we'll be back in a bit to talk about things we bought. But until then, listen to this and do your homework.
228 is the path to 229 eternal. We shall see you there. And if you find yourself lost, just look to the sky and follow the buzzards.
What?
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Open your eyes and join us as we talk about what we got this week. We're going to start off by talking about the Transformers and Transformers relevant items that we got this week. And Seth Buzzard, I want to ask you if you got anything that fits in that category.
I got three on-topic things.
What?
But only one off-topic thing. Well, actually, we'll say two off-topic things.
What?
Uh-huh.
It really is 228. What we got this week? What's one of the three things you got on topic?
I'll start with off-the-shelf official products.
Oh.
I picked up Scoop today.
Oh, I'm curious what you think of Scoop.
So I went to Toys R Us, and they actually had what looked like at least three cases of that wave on the pegs.
Wow.
Which also made me a little disappointed, because I'm never going to see Skids.
Aw.
But whatever. I'll live.
We have them in Canada, but you're not going to like our retail price.
Nope. Or your crazy-ass packaging.
He actually had, like, his wave is the start of good packaging for that line.
That's nice.
They took the comic book cover and just made it into box art on the card. So now the cards are just like a gigantic piece of artwork that's unique for each toy. Way better than that lousy stickered knockoff garbage we had for two ways.
Well, so Scoop, his transformation's a little more complicated than we thought when we first saw those early pictures of him. Like, we assumed that his transformation was going to be a lot simpler. It's not that it's that complicated, but there is a little more going on with it than I thought there was going to be.
Yeah, I find it really pleasant.
So that's good. The Target Masters, I thought they did something cool with the robot modes on the Target Masters. They're just... They got way more interesting comic bookish proportions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that kind of hurts their gun mode some.
So, I think their gun modes are great when you combine them into a big gun.
Yeah.
But individually, yeah, they really falter.
Because they're just got these legs sticking out.
Yeah.
But they're really nice looking little robots. Their robot modes are pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see, like, a evolution of the look of the Target Master instead of just sticking with what was basically the old design. Because we had some generations, like a Cyclonus came with a Target Master.
Yeah, it was really just Cyclonus and Masterpiece Hot Rod, I think, for modern Target Masters.
And at least with Cyclonus, it was very similar conceptually.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but it's cool to see them trying something different.
For sure, and I think it would have, like, if they had, I think that if their legs did something, they would have been on par easily with his. I really like how their arms tab together. I actually didn't expect that at all when I got that toy. But yeah, I don't have much to say to defend them from a lot of the complaints.
Yeah, then back to Scoop, going into his vehicle mode. I just think it's kind of cute how the cab of the tractor just goes over his head and you see all of his head inside.
Yeah.
So it's neat. I mean, he's all right. He's pretty good. I think he's all right.
Yeah, he's one of the top two for me. I think he's my number two. Actually, he's my number three, but... I like
actually the, I can't stand him. He's,
well, he's so gross. I have like the personal love list, which is that I like the Minicon combiner team the most, but honestly, they're not better toys than Scoop or Starscream. So,
Yeah, I was looking at the Minicon team for a while and decided to pass them up at least for now. Maybe I'll change my mind later.
Yeah, like I love what they did with them, but I couldn't just tell someone that that's the best of the wave. Like, you know, setting aside that personal bias.
Yeah. No. Then going into third party.
Uh-oh.
So I got Diesel.
Hey!
I haven't had a chance to open him yet.
Aww.
And give him his proper due. So I will reserve any further comment until I've had time to goof around with them and put together Menasor and all that good stuff.
Yay!
Then there's Huff.
So, I saw on Twitter that you're having a great, grand old time with Huff.
Well, I think I got stuck kind of playing up my disappointment with how unbelievably loose the hips were.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a shot at repairing it. I just don't like having to repair a figure out of the box.
Yeah.
It's, in any case, like, there's been plenty of, like, mainline stuff where it's like, oh, you just put some floor polish on this ball joint and he's fine. It's like, well, you shouldn't have to do that. It should be, if it gets loose later, if it breaks later, but it shouldn't need repairs fresh out of the box. And I get it. It's their first figure and all that stuff. And no. Fine. I'm still disappointed.
I thought it was X-Transbots.
I had a lot of people coming at me on Twitter saying, like, this is their first figure.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was cute. Because everyone's doing Huffer. I'm mixing them all up.
Yeah.
Those Cubex engineering is... Yeah, okay. Never mind.
All right. So, like, I get that. It doesn't mean I can't be disappointed.
No, I mean... I always, when I do a review of a first figure by an indie company, I'll give them like spoken leeway on things, but I'll still say that those things happened.
Yeah. And they do so much else on that figure. Great.
Yeah.
There's lots of cool little things that move around to kind of block off empty space, like where the cab like kind of forms the hood around his head. There's a plate that flips down, so there's just, like, this solid orange plate behind his head instead of, like, all the folded-up stuff that folds up into the cab, like the front wheels. So stuff like that is cool. Like, those little details are well done. And he comes with two faces, and in the instructions they explain that the face that's mounted on the figure when you take it out of the box was a reaction to fan requests for a more cartoonish face. And then they included their original design face, which I think works way better for Huffer.
I have not heard a single person say they prefer the fan design face over the original one.
Oh, it's weird. With like, it's got weird lips. It's, I don't like it. The original face was... this very kind of blank expression, I just think works better.
Mm.
So, I got a little screwdriver, and I took the screw out, and I switched the faces, and made that happen. And then they include, like, different, like, a non-articulated set of hands. That was a fan request. I'm glad that those weren't pre-installed.
It sounds like you want to have words with all the fans who requested stuff.
Or the company for just sticking to their guns, because I don't think the fan-requested hands and face are an improvement.
Mm.
And it seems like everything else is so articulated on this guy, and there's so many moving parts. Why would you want solid, unarticulated hands? And it's not that the hands do that much. They just sort of open and close to make it easier to put the gun in. But I don't see the advantage of taking that articulation out. It doesn't help it visually, doesn't help it engineer-wise. I don't get it. So sometimes a company's just got to say, thanks for your input, but we're going with our plan.
Hmm. That seems to be the hallmark right now of a company doing their first release, is they really want to ingratiate, you know, and get it right and it's their first release, so they want to take as much input as they can. And I think it's a noble act, but it needs to be done with a lot more reservation than seems to be done right now.
Well, in my opinion, they had it right.
Yeah.
And they let the fans lead them astray. And really, I mean, look, no offense to the fans, but... we're not there. We're not seeing the process. We don't see what the finished or the prototypes look like in person and in three dimensions. We're just seeing gray pictures. So we don't have all the information. And to start making requests, it's like, well, we don't necessarily know better, not having seen it. Now, it was one thing, like, when Armada came out, and, like, the Autobot and Decepticon logos were just painted solid red and purple.
Yeah.
And then the fans, like, went, there should be the white parts in between. And then they started doing that, and those symbols look way better.
Yeah.
That's different, because then we had them in hand and saw the actual thing before we started making our demands. I don't know.
I think there's been a lot of great lessons to be learned about fan input and like what happens when, you know, because we don't get to do that very often with real Transformers. So seeing it happen on the indie third party scene and seeing how many times it's worked and how many times it's caused damage, I think should be taken as real, like, borderline, like, fandom study material. I know most people won't take it that way, but it's really interesting, like, seeing, like, hey, guess what? If Hasbro did listen to us, it would probably go horribly wrong half the time.
Yeah. Well, and then putting them side by side, Huff and Crank, Crank is more solid. He's got a brighter orange. But I think Huff looks better. Like, he's more detailed.
Mm.
And I just like his design overall better. That's not saying I dislike Crank. Just if I had to say which one do I prefer, I think Huff has a better look. But Crank is a more solid, sturdy figure. And, you know, floppy joints aside. I mean, all those little moving parts that get you those cool things, like those covering the empty space on Huff, that's just like more stuff that could possibly break if not assembled properly or not handled well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I still very much like it. I mean, he does so much very, very well. I'm just disappointed that I have to fix it.
Yeah.
So, my commentary may have come off as being more complaint-oriented than I think was intended. But just go into it. And there's been reports of people getting ones who had hips that were completely fine. So go into it knowing there's a gamble, and you may be in this situation where you got to fix them.
I think I watched two video reviews of him, and both very much said that they pretty much dug the figure, but had to do, you know, X, Y, and Z to make him in a physical state that they liked.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, that's a learning thing for Cubex to go through, which is, you know, refine their production process and make sure the tolerances are more universal and, you know, in the good way.
Yeah. But I mean, he does do a lot very well. So, I mean, I want to give them their positive propas too, but
I really like the look of his packaging and more so his booklet. Like, all the tidbits they put in the booklet I thought were super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's all good stuff. Yeah, his box is neat. I like his box. It's like kind of this simple design, but not like simple, like, we're not capable of doing anything elaborate, but like a simplified, clean, just nice box.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I still like them. I gotta go look for floor polish, apparently. And
you only have to buy a bottle
of that in my life.
Yeah, you only buy one, so.
Yeah, and then it's something that I own for the rest of my life.
Yep, you're marked.
I'll always have this bottle of floor polish, like, under the sink with all the other dangerous chemicals.
They're like, oh, you polished the floor? No. That was for a toy.
Why do you have floor polish? Your apartment is completely carpeted. Shut up.
Communist.
I'm going to tell you about something about ball and socket joints.
I'm glad that there are some ups to go with the downs on that guy, because I was worried that you were basically like, wow, I can't wait to throw this out the window.
No, and I think I got stuck in a loop where I was having to defend my opinion, which then drowned out any positive commentary I may have had.
Mm.
So I was kind of a victim of my own, or a prisoner of my own cage, or whatever that phrase is. I don't
know. Hoisted on your own.
Jean-Luc Picard.
Yep.
So that is my on-topic.
Well, I got some on-topic stuff.
I'll revisit Diesel when I have more informed commentary.
Yeah, I want to know how it goes.
Can't wait to see how his hips are.
Is that a thing with him?
I don't know. I'm just saying, I had these hip problems. I can't wait to see if I have any more.
Yeah, I mean, so long as, you know, you get out a planer and you craft him some new ratchet discs from proper hard oak wood, then it's a great toy.
Mm-hmm.
I got some stuff. I still have stuff that I haven't talked about for a while, but I'm going to start off with something I just got, which is also unofficial. I got something we actually mentioned earlier in the show, I think. Or was it on before? I can't remember now. I got Make Toys Trash Talk and Cogwheel. That being their manga mech series.
We talked about it off mic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is, primarily, this is an IDW Comics-oriented Swerve with a whole bunch of accessories, and then he is packed in with a Gears, who is actually not all that IDW, because in IDW, Gears not only has a different-looking head, but also has a different-looking chest. So this is just kind of like a classics Gears. To the point where they provide a second head that is the visor and faceplate head from the toy, which, in my opinion, looks a gajillion times better on this little guy. Like, it just makes him ooze personality, whereas the other head is a tad overly generic. It looks kind of like the Fans Project Stunicon faces, where it's just like it's a robot who's going, huh? But with the visor and faceplate, damn, like, Cogwheel Gears is... I actually like him a bit more than Swerve. Swerve I adore for the character and for how much he represents the comic book guy. Mm-hmm. And I think that all that baggage makes him... I don't know. It doesn't make him worse, but the lack of that baggage is making Cogwheel a lot more fun for me to just mess around with, because this dude's kind of like more of a blank slate. Like, there is no real biography for the comic book version of Gears. This guy's not really the comic Gears. He's not really G1 Gears. He's just, you know... neo-classics Gears. And I like that. And he's also, I think, the best Gears on the market right now. So, I mean, they both are basically the same toy with different feet, different chests, and different, like, top bits for the car modes. But they're other, like, skeletally, they're identical. And they're a really great little transformer. I'm trying to not have the new toy syndrome with them, but I think they are one of the best things to come out of transforming robots, official or unofficial, in a while. They're like everything that's great stylistically about the Fans Project Stunicons. But they're
like how you're trying not to be new toy syndrome, but you're using like the most like
absolute hyperbole.
Yeah. You sound like Steve Jobs doing a press conference. Like, it's wonderful. It's magical. It's fantastic. It's magical.
It actually changed my clothes. But I don't know, they look like some of the best stuff from Fans Project, causality, but like complexity wise, they hit this like magnificent tone of like they transform just enough, you know, in both directions, and the posability is really good. Like, the only problem I've had with them is their hands pop off of the wrist ball joints kind of easily, but I think that was possibly on purpose to prevent those tiny ball socket stems from getting like stressed from moving the hands around. Switching the heads is a little bit scary. I found it safer to loosen the screws in the back a little bit before popping them off the ball joints, but some other people haven't needed to do that. I think the Rainer said that his just, you know, they pop on and off just fine. The only problem posability wise is you know, it's the ongoing problem with the Swerve and Gears design. It's kind of tricky to use their head joint because they have a pretty good ball jointed neck. In order to switch the heads, you can actually, like, pull the chest comes off with the head and arms attached, and it's really, It's really easy to pull on and off, but it's very solid, so it doesn't just fall off. It's like on three sliding rail tracks. So it's very simple to do, but that's the easiest way to pose the heads. The heads are actually not impossible to pose just by, like, you know, pushing your thumb into their face and wiggling it around. But if you do want to do, like, some more subtle head gestures, you can, you know, pull the chest out and adjust it there. I still don't... In these guys' cases, I can see why maybe they didn't have a flip-up thing over their heads, because the hoods of their car modes do stuff. But that's a little bit of a bummer. But man, they have, like, a ball-jointed, like, waist. And it's really, really fine little toys. These guys have been in my pocket going to work and back for the last, like, week. And I don't usually take toys to work. So that says
you probably shouldn't.
I can't.
I mean, man. It's work.
I know.
You're supposed to be working.
But I had render bars. And am I going to surf Twitter or am I going to play with a toy while I'm rendering video? I decided to play with a toy.
I guess you hate all of us on Twitter then.
Yep. I got no
That's
time.
That's my takeaway from that story.
From your nonsense conversations. Swerve also, like, the two of them come with two guns. Technically, that's one for each, but both guns are guns Swerve has used in the More Than Meets the Eye comic book. And Swerve also comes with a tray, with a huge mug and two shot glasses, all filled with, like, pink Energon, because Swerve runs a bar in the comic book. And, he can carry the tray, he can carry the mugs and whatnot. The tray can be carried in his truck mode. The one bummer is, all of their accessories use a peg that is slightly smaller than 5mm. So using the glasses with, you know, proper transformers is tricky, because they'll rattle around in their hands, and that's kind of a bummer. But
how does it go with Masterpiece Grimlock and his serving tray?
I don't have my Masterpiece Grimlock with me right now. So I have not yet tested that. But I'll get back to you. And also, given that you like Gears, I really hope you get a hold of Cogwheel, because a ton of people buying this were all saying, I guess I'll buy the 2-pack, but I only want Swerve. And so ideally, that means if anyone out there listening wants to get the Gears from the 2-pack, it shouldn't be difficult. The number of people who only want Swerve, I think, outweigh the number of people who actively want both.
Well, someone's already reached out to me on Twitter about that, and I've been meaning to get back to them, and I probably should. I remember seeing in pictures about, like, the shot glasses and stuff, and then being like, oh, yeah. I did make a comment that might be cool to have the Swerve. And have him hang out with my Grimlock, who is permanently in dinosaur mode with an apron and bow tie and serving tray. So I don't know. I got to think about the whole situation some more.
Yeah, they're up for pre-order everywhere now, so the rush, the worry that they'd only be at one place is gone. Swerve is also really cool. Like, Swerve is technically the better, you know, figure of the two. He really accurately represents the comic character. He's got a great expression on his face where he's all like, hey! And he comes with, you know... He comes with topical items. He turns into the proper, like, Cybertronian truck that he turns into in the comics, which is really cool, because it's a really cute little truck. But I don't know, like, I think, cause, I mean, Gears has a more interesting color scheme to some degree, but I really think it is the fact that Gears doesn't carry the baggage of being a really great, like comic character who's great for non-action reasons. For some reason, that makes him feel more like a toy you can just kind of, like, carry around in your pocket and play around with. Whereas Swerve kind of feels like, oh, I don't want to damage Swerve. I want to keep him on the Lost Light shelf and blah, blah, blah. I love them both. Swerve, this is the Swerve to get. I'm going to get the Hasbro one, too. The Hasbro one is completely fine. And if you didn't panic and buy it for $30 or $40, it's definitely, you know, worth considering, because it's a lot cheaper than this one. But this one is a very good Swerve, too. So, very impressed with these things. They are heavenly, and they literally changed the face of technology as we know it. All in a box the size of a pack of playing cards. That keynote is magical. Yeah, that's right. I am going to talk about... All right, I'm going to talk about this other third-party thing, because I don't think it's going to come up again anytime soon. I got Perfect Effect Warden. He's another IDW thing. I've had him for a bit, but I wanted to mess with him more before I talked about him. So he's a really, like to kind of break it down into like one sentence, you know, to take all his pros and cons into account, he is a really
wonderful,
magical, perfect. He is
innovative.
A really good Soul of Chogokin style toy of Fortress Maximus from the comics. Everything else about him starts to go real like left and right. Like he, the thing that I think is really cool about him, because Perfect Effect, you, like so far their track record is they make interesting toys that often need to have pieces pulled off and put back on to fully transform. When you have Warden and you just want to turn him into a G1 Fort Max head, he has like there's no parts forming off his body. The only thing that parts forms is his pistol plugs into the forehead of the head mode. That's it. It's a really, really cool transformation, and it's really cool to see a fully contained transformation from Perfect Effect. If you want to turn him into a tank, then you have to do mass disassembly, reassembly of all kinds of pieces. And even though I love how it looks from a front three-quarter view, the tank mode is a mess physically. It's barely held together. It's kind of like while you're putting it together, it feels like it's going to be really solid. And then suddenly you're done and you're like, wait, I feel like I should be plugging two or three more things on him to hold these big chunks together. If you pick up his tank mode and shake it real hard, I bet you it'll crumble in your hand, which is a bummer. But the actual, like the base robot figure is really nicely built, really nicely painted. There's a lot of finesse in the construction of that toy. It's very impressive, and I think it's Perfect Effect's masterpiece so far. I think it's going to be hard for them to one-up that figure anytime soon. Like, it really is a step above everything they have ever done. I thought that the RC bikes were a pretty cool improvement, but this thing, like, does not even look like it came from the same company that did the RC bikes. So I think it's really worth your time, provided that you are not holding its tank mode as a critical part of the package. Because if you are, the tank mode is indefensible. And okay. I'm really bummed out by it.
I would be more interested if I had a Fort Max to put the Fort Max head on.
And that's the crummy part. The alt mode he had to not need a Fort Max is the worst part of the toy.
Yeah, and like I didn't think that tank looked all that impressive in pictures to begin with, and then your description just really makes it sound like more of an afterthought than an intended mode.
It's a whole lot like all their other stuff. Where, you know, like you're pegging weapons all over them to hold their body together. Yeah. Like the body folds into a core and you peg stuff all over them, except that now you're pegging stuff all over them that's also supposed to hold basically three chunks together. And it's just not held together. Like, it's not like it's fragile. I can pick it up and put it down, you know, if I just pick it up, put it down without trying to break it. But it's a hassle to get it together. And the payoff is kind of weak, and it's so rickety that it's hard. You can't really easily push it down and push it forward to make use of the working rubber treads, because it feels like something's going to go wrong if you do that.
Yeah, and I really like Perfect Effect. Like, they have a style to their figures that are unique and identifiable to them. Mm-hmm. So it's a little disappointing to hear that they didn't do something as well as maybe they could have. But it's more the fact that I really don't have a use for the main function of that figure, which is a Fort Max head. I don't have a Fort Max, so...
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say is really the head mode is secondary. Like, really, I'd say 75% of the love of that toy is its robot mode and the armored robot mode, where you, like, put all the accessories on it. Like, that's the main event. That's why I would more so say it's like a Soul of Chogokin figure. It's a robot first. Uh-huh. That happens to transform really well into a giant head. And
yeah, and like I could be interested in that.
Yeah. The Headmaster is also really good. It's a neat spin on the classic Headmaster transformation, and it's Perfect Effect doing a small robot. So he is pretty poseable for how tiny he is, and his like he looks pretty good. They're also really creative with how they work him into the head mode and the tank mode. Like, he actually has a spot to sit, to, like, stand inside the forehead of the head mode. Or, sorry, inside the face of the head mode. Which is kind of cool. So like they play to some of their strengths in that guy, but and I really am hoping that if they continue to do like these like DX level like big releases, if the, if they're all going to be like construction wise on the level of Warden, that's going to be some of the finest stuff out of that scene. Like it's like Bandai tier the way they put that toy together. Gratz, perfect effect. And yeah, I have some other on-topic stuff, but I some of it I haven't really played with yet, and one of them I'm kind of holding on to as a rainy day talk about. So I want to wait till someone else gets it.
Boy, we've been getting some rain around here.
Well,
boy, howdy! We went from like it's the worst drought in history and the driest February, January of all times to we got to rescue this dog from a flood.
I'm stuck under like a an Arctic like whatever. Like there's a giant like spinning thing on the Weather Channel. And it looks scary, and it's from global warming, and they're like, yo, get ready for more terrifying cold wind.
Yeah, well, speaking of things with an unfortunate name, like third party.
Yep.
Global warming is not a good name for the situation.
No!
It implies that it's just going to be hotter. climate change would have been a better moniker, and like some people are trying to get the shift to like stop saying global warming, it's climate change. But then like the people who don't believe or pushing against it are like, I don't know where this global warming thing is because it's 10 feet of snow here. It's like, okay, well, that's there. So
I'm part of the problem, but man, I hate the Kleenex effect where like the first name that picks up steam just becomes the name.
Yeah,
I hate that because sometimes those first names are garbage.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's our on-topic, what we got. Let's go into the realm of off-topic. Seth, you said you got a thing.
I got two. Well, one toy.
Mm-hmm.
And one cool kind of thing.
All right.
So what do you want first?
Let's talk about the toy first.
I got a Star Wars Black Label. Mm-hmm. Han Solo.
I've heard good things about him.
Yeah, so I had seen on the previously mentioned Big Bad Toy Store.
Mm-hmm.
They had a pre-order for... So Han Solo was in this new wave coming out, and he's in the previous wave. So Big Bad had pre-orders for the new wave Han Solo, which is exactly the same, for like half price. Because they knew they were going to be stuck with all these Han Solos. Because the really hardcore people that wanted it are going to get the first release.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know what? I can wait another few weeks, a month or whatever, and only pay half. So I pre-ordered that cheaper Han Solo, and then like I would see it on shelves all over the place and be like, just keep waiting. You're going to get it for half the cost. It's all good. And yeah, he's a good one. I mean, all the Black Label stuff's been pretty good so far, at least the stuff I've gotten. I've passed on a couple here and there. Like, I'm going to pass on the prequel Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm going to be on the hunt for Bespin Luke. And I still can't believe they haven't done R2-D2 or C-3PO yet to go with R2-D2.
At Toy Fair, they played some of their cards and said, all right, here's the Darth Vader. I bet you C-3PO is one of the other ones they're keeping close to the chest for now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you can't just do one of those two. You gotta do them both eventually.
Yeah.
So yeah, Han's cool. He comes with two pairs of hands. One just regular hands, one with gloves. Gloves that I think you see him wearing on screen for like 3 seconds at the most. Then he comes with two belts. One is like more of a Han Solo belt with a holster for, like, the Han Solo blaster. And then a second belt, which is, like, the Stormtrooper utility belt with a holster for the Stormtrooper blaster. So, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, I like the idea of the two different belts for different scenes in the movie. So that's all right. I don't know if the other pair of hands, the gloved hands, were that necessary, but fine, whatever.
As long as they aren't preventing some other key accessory, and I couldn't think of one.
Yeah, I mean, for this Han Solo costume, I can't really think of much more he could have come with.
Yeah.
Because this is very episode 4 Han Solo, and like his outfit was a little different in Empire, and his outfit was kind of different in Jedi, so I would expect if they did like Bespin Han Solo, he would have different accessories that were more relevant to that movie. But this is very much a New Hope Han Solo, so these are accessories that are relevant to that. And
yeah,
I can't think of much more he could have come with.
A lightsaber.
Yeah, or a blaster effect part for shooting first.
Are you I forgot, did you get Greedo yet, or are you going to get him?
Yeah, no, I got
Greedo. Yeah, you got Greedo.
Yeah, I was stoked to get Greedo. Greedo's great.
I've been seeing Greedo around. Everywhere in Canada, they cost just over $20 before tax, so I'm like,
But Greedo's really good. Really good sculpt, really good posability. I really like Greedo. I mean, he doesn't do anything like especially outstanding, but he doesn't do anything wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's just like a really good Greedo.
Yeah, yeah, he's just a really good, solid figure.
Mm-hmm.
Does everything he's supposed to do and doesn't screw anything up. That's my opinion, anyway.
Cool. Well, what's the thing, then? What's the neat thing?
So I got a Google Chromecast.
Like for your arm? Or
no. Do you even know what a Chromecast is?
Nope.
I think this is part of the problem with the Chromecast. I think very few people are even aware that this is a thing that exists.
I'm going to look it up.
Right. So they're $35. And it's a little doodad. You stick it into your TV's HDMI port. Then you sync it with just about any kind of device you can imagine. Like through your Wi-Fi. So like just about any smartphone, tablet, PC, Mac, just about anything that can play video, you could sync the Chromecast to. Then, so like I'm using my MacBook, and I've set it up on both the Mac OS and Windows 7 because I have Boot Camp on my MacBook. So then I've already been using Chrome for my web browser for a couple years now. So when you set up, then you download an extension for Chrome. Now, if you're using it on a tablet or a smartphone, then there's apps to download, and they have apps for pretty much all the major OSs.
Mm-hmm.
iOS, Android, blah, blah, blah. So then you download the extension or the app, what have you. Then when you're watching video that's compatible, say YouTube or HBO Go, I believe Hulu is compatible, it adds a little icon. Like, you know when you're watching YouTube, there's those little icons in the bottom corner?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the full screen and the settings and all that. Now there's a new little icon. And when you click on that, then that kicks the video from your device to the Chromecast plugged into your TV. Now your video is on the TV. So in the case of like the Roku player, where if you have Comcast, you can't use HBO Go on the Roku player because Comcast has decided they're not going to support that.
I hate that nonsense.
Now, as far as Comcast knows, you're watching on your laptop, or you're watching on your iPhone,
yeah,
or you're watching on your Galaxy tablet. But really, you're watching on the TV.
You know what? This is great. I like anything that circumvents the ludicrous nonsense of like, well, how are you using our cable and data, or blah, blah, blah. We don't want you using their blah, blah, blah. Stupid, stupid stuff.
Well, you just don't worry about it. Now, there's been some press recently where some student has tracked some data throughput and has proven that Comcast has been throttling Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix just paid protection money to...
Right. Which is nonsense. It's garbage.
Yeah. Honestly, please, if you don't know what net neutrality is and you're listening to this, please go and look up what net neutrality is and understand why it is actually important.
Important. I'm wondering... I would be curious for somebody to do some figuring and see if there's any dip in quality if you watch Netflix via a laptop or a smartphone, even if you're on your Comcast Wi-Fi and you're kicking it out to your TV on Chrome, on the Chromecast. I'd be interested if there's any throttling there.
I'm not going to say I think that's happening, but if someone said and proved that's happening, I would be entirely unsurprised.
Well, I guess the way the student proved it was he was monitoring the data throughput while watching Netflix, and then he used like the university's VPN or something to where now what he was doing was masked to Comcast.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't see that he was using Netflix. Like, he was using Netflix, but because he was routing it through this university stuff. And usually when you would do that, you're not going to get as good internet speed. But even with the loss of internet speed going through the university stuff, once Comcast wasn't detecting that he was watching Netflix, he was getting better performance.
Yeah. And I think it's terrifying conceptually that Comcast could feasibly even know that he's on a university line or on Netflix or anything like that. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah. And Netflix just got bigger because apparently they're merging with, was it Time Warner?
No, Comcast.
Comcast is like merging with Time Warner or buying out Time Warner or something like that. Or
yep.
So if that gets through, if that doesn't get stopped, like as a monopoly or something, then Comcast is just getting bigger and more powerful. And
Netflix had to pay protection money so they could even properly get their... Well, not necessarily Netflix. Well, Netflix paid. It's the people who do... I forgot the name now. I think it's Viso or something, who does Netflix's data streaming. Something like that. There had to be money passed under a table, practically, to go like, all right, maybe we won't throttle you down to 8 kilobytes a second. Like a bunch of friggin' like 30s whatever gangsters, just huge hats, just sitting behind a table. Like, it's disgusting.
And this is some nice internet you got here. Sure would be a shame if something happened to it.
Like a squeeze. Just squeezing a rubber pipe.
Yeah, Comcast is not our friend.
I'm gonna resist yelling for another 10 minutes about how stupid this all is. Because this is one of the things that makes me get really pissed off is the whole way of like, well, this version of the internet's going to run better for you than that part of the internet. Unless you pay us some money, then maybe this part of the internet will run as well as the rest of it. Because it's all the same frigging internet, you know? Like, it's a bunch of arbitrary, completely non-existent divisions of like levels of internet. And it's all made up. It's... anyway.
Yeah, but the Chromecast works pretty good.
Yeah.
And when you're doing that, when you are casting your video out to the TV on it, it doesn't just take over your device. I haven't tried it on my iPhone yet. I've only done it via my laptop, but, you know, I get the video going, I click the button, kick it to the TV, and then I can do whatever else I want with the laptop. Now that turns your whatever device you're using into your remote control. So if you want to pause or rewind, you're doing that on the progress bar on your device.
Yeah.
But you know, for $35, I'm really satisfied with the way this thing works and the quality of image that I'm getting.
Yeah, when I Googled it and I saw what the device looked like, I remembered seeing that on your Twitter feed. And I remember when you tweeted the picture, I thought to myself, oh, what is that? Because I had no idea what it was.
Yeah. And so, like, my main motivation for this thing was my girlfriend is a huge fan of Game of Thrones, as any normal person would be.
Hmm.
But she doesn't have HBO. So I had been trying to figure out a way for her to be able to access my HBO Go account and be able to watch Game of Thrones. So I got this Roku for her off Woot at a discount, discovered after the fact that Comcast is like, nope. Then I heard some chatter about the Chromecast on like This Week in Tech, and some other places mentioned it. So I'm like, I wonder. And then I started doing some reading on it, and I thought, well, this will most likely work. But even still, at $35, it's not that big of an investment. So if it is a little, if it doesn't work quite the way I was hoping, or somehow HBO Go is still locked out.
The Comcast man just shows up and just rips the Chromecast out of your TV.
It just, you open the door, he just pushes past you, walks the TV, plucks it out, never says a word, and leaves. Yeah, so I figured, you know, for $35, I'll take the shot. And I'll see how it goes. And it's small enough, I could take it back and forth from her place to my place, plug it in wherever I need it to be. If I want to leave it here and let her watch stuff, because she has decided she wants to check out Newsroom or Veep or any of the other programs on HBO, then that's cool. But yeah, it's just, and it's kind of fun to be able to easily kick out these videos from YouTube to the TV. Because, yeah, like, at home, like, our big TV in the living room, I have a PlayStation 3 hooked up to it. And you could watch YouTube through there. But I've had some times where, like, I've watched something on YouTube from my computer, but can't find it on the PlayStation. Or I can't find it on my iPhone.
And doing a, like, search,
some stuff doesn't make it to mobile devices.
And doing a search through, you know, some of those interfaces can kind of suck at times.
Oh, it's the, well, the PlayStation 3 interface for YouTube used to be better. And then they updated it and made it way worse.
So, you know how I was kind of like talking about how, oh, damn it, you know, I have to buy a smart TV if I want to buy a TV. Smart TVs are so dumb, et cetera, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
So there is this one really great thing about the smart TV, which is it has a YouTube app that I can pair to my iPhone, or actually anything that I have, I can access YouTube from. And then I can go onto a device where it's more comfortable to use YouTube, push on a video, and then just push on the thing that says stream to TV, and it just starts playing it on the TV, and I can control it from the device. And it's fantastic. It's,
yeah, well, beautiful. Chromecast is like that, but for
everything,
so much more, yeah, than just YouTube. And well, not everything, because, yeah, like, I was looking at a video on the CBS website, and their video player didn't support Chromecast. So it's not everything, but I mean, really, it's the big stuff you really want in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, do you really need that David Letterman clip kicked out from the CBS website, or that CNN news clip of Joe Rogan talking about Alzheimer's, which is amazing. Or not Joe Rogan, Seth Rogan.
It's like Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Puts the reporter in a headlock and just knees them a few, yeah, times.
He came from a UFC fight.
I'll give you Alzheimer's.
Thud, yeah, thud. Like, like going off on the total tangent, but, you know, really good on Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
Yeah. I'm impressed with every headline I've seen with his name on it this last week. Like, also that one about, you know, him spearheading, in a way, helping spearhead that Console Wars film based on that upcoming book.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, they're doing a book about the SNES Genesis console war, and he and the producer of Social Network are spearheading doing a feature film version of the book.
I'm into it.
Yeah, I think it sounds like a really good idea, and it sounds like they want to take it seriously.
I'm also curious about this book. Do you know what the book's called?
It's coming out in August.
Is there an audiobook for it?
I don't know. They talk about it on the latest Bombcast, and if you look up Seth Rogen Console Wars, you should be getting news articles about the book and the movie.
Do they talk about it early in the show or later in the show?
Much later.
Okay, because I'm still in the "What did you do this week?" section.
You're at the much overhyped blood fight between Jeff and Brad over.
Oh yeah, I got through that.
Once I finished it, I was like, "This was what Twitter was telling me was." There's nothing.
Well, I didn't even know Twitter was getting upset about it. Just as I was listening to it, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing for these guys to be arguing about. I wish they would just stop it.
Twitter and Gaff were making it out like it was the most violent table-flipping argument in Giant Bomb history. And I was like, but they... I just listened to their 2013 end-of-year Game of Year stuff, and Brad was a lot more surly trying to have Dota 2 be, like, number 3 on their list of games of 2013 than that argument.
Yeah, well, I remember a couple, like a year or two ago, well, it had to have been over a year ago, there were some listeners trying to make it sound like a Ryan Davis hated Brad Shoemaker.
I remember seeing the meme.
And they addressed it on an episode where, like, Ryan's like, I don't hate Brad. We had a disagreement about a thing. Like, this is stupid. Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's like listeners have decided that everybody hates Brad, and I don't know where this has come from.
Yeah, because half the time I see or hear anything, you know, I hear about that, then see the root media of it. Half the time, Brad is starting stuff with people and often is, you know, at least partly closing the conversation as well. Like, he's hardly... like some kind of victim that everyone's jumping on.
I don't know.
I like that podcast still.
Yeah. No, it's one of my favorites. So. Yeah. Anyway. The Chromecast.
Yeah. Check it out. Sounds like it's good. I'm going to keep an eye out for that next time I'm in the States.
Yeah, it's $35. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, I got lots of off-topic stuff I can talk about. But I'm trying to only talk about the Lego sets I built, because I went on a bit of a Lego binge this month. And I should save most of that, you know, for Aaron, because he knows it's blah, 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 Lego. But you know what? I think it kind of sucks that Aaron gets all the Lego attention.
Well, did you see... I tweeted an article about it. I pointed it at Aaron and Defuzz, because they're, like, the most Lego people I know.
Yeah.
About a guy sold a platinum...
Oh! I saw that, yeah.
Lego piece for $14,000.
It was a Bionicle mask of all things.
Yeah. It was part of a promotion. Like, the grand prize winner got a platinum mask, and then I think there were 3 gold masks.
Yeah.
And so he sold the platinum mask to one of the gold mask holders. So that guy owns a store up here, up in San Rosa, which is just a couple towns north of Petaluma.
Mm-hmm.
And just today we were driving down the street and I went, oh, there's that guy's store. And we pulled over and went and looked around.
Oh, is that where you posted the picture of that crazy, like, robot castle thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nuts.
So I don't think you could see it in that picture, but in the head of the big castle guy, there's a little throne with the king sitting on it.
That's crazy.
And there's a word balloon floating next to him, and he's saying, when all the dragons are dead, I will rule the world.
That's great. That's That's the best quote for a king to ever make. Well, I want to talk about one Lego set I built, and I want to talk about it with you, Seth.
Okay.
Aaron doesn't get this one.
Oh.
When I went to visit Kryn for Valentine's Day weekend, I also was keeping an eye out for clearance Lego, because they don't seem to do that in Canada, but they do it in the States all the time. And
all the time.
There's all the time, according to the Twitter all pictures the I time. See. There was a set that's $100 in Canada. I think it's like $90 in the States. I saw it at a Target for less than $40. It's called the Bug Obliterator.
Oh, boy.
It's one of the big Galaxy Squad sets.
Now, I thought you had said at some point you were sticking to the movie.
Yeah. And then I saw clearance sale Galaxy Squad, and I was like, well, you know, I said to myself,
nice,
I'm repeating what I said to myself. I'm not saying this to you directly, but I said to myself, well, you know, Galaxy Squad's what got me back into Lego last year. So, this is the orange team's set. You get a cool like dragonfly thing, for the bad guy aliens, which looks way cooler than any of the big alien devoted sets aside from one. But the main event is the orange vehicles. You get this little like ATV thing with like, it has a missile launcher that can come up out of the back, and you get that jet. And then the money shot is where you can combine the two together into a big double cockpitted jet thing. And it's a very cool piece of engineering to put together. It's a big dense space vehicle, and you get a little robot guy with an Optimus Prime style head, and he has a big ass gun. And I kind of like it. So, yeah, I came out of this going like, well, you know, I'm going to collect the movie sets. And maybe, you know, collect Galaxy Squad as well. Because, I mean, it's already done. So there's a finite number of those. So I'll be good after that. Is what I told myself. Although, the other day, I also ordered, like, I was at Toys R Us.
Oh, boy, here we go.
And to fill out, I think I mentioned this last week already, but to fill out $50 so I get $10 off something that I really wanted. I also saw these cheap Lego things. I was like, hey, Monster Fighters was pretty cool, and the Sea Swamp creature guy was in the movie, so technically this is a movie set because I'm getting one of the Master Builders. So I bought that, too.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go again.
It's all right. Just gotta keep a handle on things, and all will be well. So yeah, that does it for the what we gots.
No, I got something on Steam.
Oh, what'd you get?
Last night, I got RPG Maker VX8.
Oh, yeah, I saw you tweeting. That's your reasons for getting it are the best reasons to get something like that.
Yeah, so I've had this idea. I tweeted about it about a year ago. I was starting to write stuff down. So I have a long history of having almost like anxiety attacks when I'm trying to go to sleep. Like my mind, now not occupied with daily events, can wander to all my darkest fears. And, like, I get cold chills down my back, and, it's awful.
Yep.
So I developed a system of distracting myself until I fall asleep by making up stories. And some of them are narratives, and more recently, it's been trying to figure out, like the logics of like a fantasy world or a science fiction world, like beyond just, oh, it's magic. Like how would these societies coexist and how would they work? So I've been putting a lot of thought into like this fantasy realm for a while. Like how can I portray elves kind of different, or how can I portray dwarves kind of different? And then what am I going to do with all these ideas I've had? because I'm not a writer. Like when I try to write, I get bored of the act of writing and then either quit or start half-assing it.
Yeah.
And then I had messed with a previous version of RPG Maker a while ago and got kind of frustrated. But at 75% off on this version, and reading some reviews that said they simplified a lot of the aspects, then I started thinking, like, well, what if I made, like, not so much a game, but, like, more like an interactive narrative? So I wouldn't be so much trying to design, like, a JRPG as you would be walking through a story sort of a thing. Or not even a story, but, like, you're almost playing, like, a reporter in this fantasy world.
Yeah.
Interviewing people, like, the different races and learning about this world's history through oral tradition type story.
I think that's a...
And so we'll see if I can stick to it and actually produce anything.
I think it's a strong idea, and it's, I mean, you know, outside of RPG Maker, there are straight up narrative games in you know, that indie scene we were talking about before that, you know, have come up. They've got some pretty good feedback. I enjoyed a couple of them.
Yeah. Well, I think what I want to try to do is just put something together using the assets that are included in RPG Maker out of the box, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I finish that, then investigate, like, building upon it and creating, like, original art assets and whatnot. Because, like, with Elves, for example, like, I have a little different... I think I've come up with a different idea on how to portray Elves, like, both in, like, what they are and what they look like sort of a thing. Like, in some cases, they would look like your typical fantasy elf. Like, I have different races of elf,
yeah,
in short. So, like, this group of elves look like your typical Lord of the Rings beautiful fantasy elf. And this race of elves are a little more... If you look at, like, actual human mythology of elves, like, a little less, like, shorter, less, slightly less human in appearance sort of an elf. And I don't want to tip my hat too much on a lot of these things, so I'll stop there. But
no, I am fully behind the idea, and I know other people have used RPG Maker as a storytelling medium. And I've seen some really cool, actually, really, really well done horror games come out of RPG Maker.
Yeah, well, looking at it, I mean, the sale's over now.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's like 30 something packs you could buy. Like, some are music packs. Most of them are like packs of art assets. And there's horror theme sets, there's high fantasy sets, there's modern day sets, there's just all these different art style sets. So if you wanted to make a game set modern day, there's that tile set you could get. If you don't have the artistic ability to create your own art asset sort of a thing.
Yeah.
So it's I've always thought it was a really cool system, that it was a neat thing that existed. And it's cool that there's people out there making these tile sets to expand upon it and give people more options. So, like I said, it's the real trick is, am I going to be able to stick to it and actually produce something?
Yeah, and I can't do anything other than say, like, go for it, man, go for it. But
yeah, and, like, I was looking, there was a little timer on the sale, and before I went to bed last night, there was, like, okay, there's this many hours left, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to sleep that late, so maybe I'll sleep on it and decide in the morning. And then right before I went to bed, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to buy it. It's only $17. And then I, like, slept way in this morning. Like, I haven't slept in this late in a long time. And I was like, you know what? If I didn't do it, the timer would have run out. I would have missed the sale. So, for better or worse, I got it.
Was a very serendipitous moment. I didn't get anything on Steam other than I started playing Binding of Isaac again. And I jumped on, died a bit, but on my first night playing it again, got my first game win as Judas. So
I don't know what that means. So
I know someone out there. It's all because Klepek's doing it daily, and I watched the Spelunky stuff.
Klepek doing a thing.
Yeah, I watched him do the daily Spelunky stuff, and I was like, that seems cool. And I was like, I want to keep watching this when he goes to Binding of Isaac. And then like 2 days in, I was like, I really want to play Binding of Isaac again. I like that game. I want to try streaming playing it too. I've always meant to figure out how to stream on Twitch with XSplit, so I'm going to give that a try sometime. Just for funsies. But I guess that's all we got. So that's our 228 show for 2014. Thank you for joining me, Seth, and thank you all for listening in. We'll be back next week with more Transformers talk. And hey, you know what? In a couple months, we're gonna have seen Transformers 4. So I guess that's...
Oh no!
Yeah, that's right, Seth. You're gonna have seen Transformers 4. Are you ready?
Oh god!
Are you ready?
I'm looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm hyped for Transformers 4 talk.
What about Guardians?
Guardians, so Guardians and Godzilla, I am so already set on seeing those, I've actually not watched the trailers.
Okay, I watched the trailer last night. And I'm not sure necessarily about how they're portraying the Guardians.
So are you coming at this from knowing the 90s Guardians, I forgot the original Guardians, or like the Annihilation Guardians?
I think more the Annihilation Guardians.
Because, I mean, that's who they're going for. But I know so some people...
So were they like a ragtag mob of ne'er-do-wells?
Yeah, the original miniseries from Annihilation is they're an assembly of cosmic Marvel characters who were at a penal colony, and they were basically assembled like the Suicide Squad and told, okay, you got to go do this mission.
Okay. Now, once they had like such like matching uniforms kind of a vibe... Like, especially with Star-Lord and Rocket Raccoon, like, clearly they were wearing uniforms.
Yeah.
That matched sort of the way that they were portraying the characters in the trailer. Like, I didn't... And, like, I barely know them from Annihilation, let alone anything else. I had just had more the impression that they were... Yeah, they were like a ragtag mob, but they were like a pretty serious military fighting force sort of a thing.
Oh no, they were prisoners sent out to, like, in the first two issues or three issues they killed like three characters because they kind of set it up to trick you into thinking they were going to kill them all by the end. Uh-huh. And so they had like two shock deaths and then went like, you know what, we're actually going to keep the rest of them. But they had like, I can't remember the characters anymore. It was like some lady alien and some guy with the power cosmic. Like, it was like the current Captain Universe was one of them, and he accidentally blew up the Lady Alien.
Yeah, well, not to give too much away once you haven't seen the trailer, but they're like introducing the characters as they're like coming through like a Nova Corp security thing.
Oh, Nova Corp's in it?
Oh, you didn't know that?
No,
some of the earliest like onset photos that got out were like a bunch of Nova Corp dudes.
Yes. All right.
So they're like coming through, being processed by Nova Corp, and like getting mugshots taken. And there's a guy like reading off details, like, "Oh, this is Rocket. He's wanted for blah 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 blah, and 17 counts of doo doo doo." And then they get to Star Lord, and he's like, they say his real name, and like, this is like whatever, aka Star Lord. And one of the other Nova Corp guys is like, "Who?" And I'm like, that's kind of a cute little self-referential thing, because I don't think barely anybody knows who Star-Lord is.
So Star-Lord, as far as that Star-Lord, he appeared in Annihilation literally as, I haven't actually been Star-Lord for ages, but it used to be my thing, and then he got arrested. And then, basically, they always kind of play it tongue-in-cheek, is like, once upon a time, he was the Star-Lord. But, you know, that was decades ago. At this point in time, he's like, whatever.
Yeah, well, it seems like he's still like introducing himself as Star-Lord.
That's kind of
funny.
As
though the name carries weight, but everybody else is like, I don't know.
Yeah, the comics even always played it as like, they really would kind of go like, yeah, it is a kind of silly name, and no one knows who he is, and that makes the gravitas of his name even funnier.
Well, and then, like, they play a joke where, like, he puts, as they're talking about him, like, he's holding one hand up, and then, like, he's acting like he's turning a crank with his other hand, and he's slowly raising his middle finger. And then when his finger gets all the way up, he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know what this machine did."
Yeah, it sounds like this movie sounds like it's totally up my alley. I only had two worries. One of them is gone now, because one of my worries was they were going to do this but not do Nova, and it sounds like that's not something to worry about in the long con. The other one is that I tweeted about this. I am really worried I'm going to turn into one of those obnoxious people who's like, "Well, I was in a Guardians of the Galaxy before the movie."
I thought you were going to be one of those obnoxious people that say the comics are better and they screwed it all up. Is how I am when it comes to the X-Men.
I was thinking I was going to be like that, but I'm like, no, the only thing I can really go on them about is like, "Oh, where's Mantis? Why didn't you put Mantis? Mantis is a core member of the team." But no one in Joe Public knows who any of these people are. So the number of them who are already in the film is impressive.
Well, my big concern was, once Rocket is going to have to be CGI, that it would be like the Transformer movies, where like Rocket's there, but he's not really interacting with anybody.
Yeah.
Like that's been my concern. And this trailer didn't give me enough information either way to make me think it is or isn't going to be that way.
Yeah.
But at least the CGI model for Rocket looks amazing. It looks so good. Yeah. Like, he looks great. So,
yeah,
I'm just fingers crossed that he's actually going to interact with the live characters.
Yeah, that trailer and the Godzilla trailer are the ones where it's like, if I catch him in a theater, then whatever, but I'm not going to go out of my way to watch him, because I'm already going to see those movies. Like, yeah. I wouldn't be watching the Transformers trailers, except that we do a weekly podcast about it, so I would like to stay up to date on that content. But
yeah.
I'm totally happy to go in blind on Guardians and on Godzilla. Godzilla more so for the Bryan Cranston factor, I admit, because I'm actually not all that into Godzilla as a franchise, but I really like the original movie.
Yeah, well, Drax, like, for as amazing as Rocket looks, Drax the Destroyer kind of looks old-fashioned-y.
Yeah.
Rubber muscle kind of. I mean, they cast a huge guy to play
him. It's Dave Bautista. Yeah. And the problem I have with Dave Bautista in movies is he looks too much like Dave Bautista no matter what movie he's in. Like, I don't know how to say it differently. Like, I have
He's painted up green and red like Drax, he just kind of looks... He looks like a guy painted up, and he kind of looks rubber suit muscly. Whether they padded him up more or not, I didn't really get that good of a look. I really hope they didn't. I mean, if you're already going to cast this giant muscle man, like, just deal with the muscles he's got. They're probably plenty.
I think if he looks rubbery, it would probably be more so the case of he's just a very large rubbery dude.
Yeah. But, I mean, he looks just like a guy they painted green with red stripey things.
Yeah.
And that's not that version of Drax. Like, when I think of Drax the Destroyer, I think of, like, the old school Drax the Destroyer with a cape and stuff. And
yeah.
And not shirtless guy with knives.
There is a transition that turned Drax basically into Riddick, which is really funny because Riddick's also in the movie. But there was a comic book transition that got him there.
Well, I read all that stuff, but I was still like, Drax with knives seems weird. Drax lifting up an entire skyscraper, using that as a club. Like, that's what I think Drax the Destroyer is.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like somebody that earned the title Destroyer, not a dude that, like, is going to cut you with knives. That's Drax the Butcher. That's a different guy.
Well, I regret to cycle you back to where we started, but as I said,
it's the end of the show.
It's the end of the show, and Transformers 4 will be in our lives in less than half a year. I'm stoked. So
Guardians of the Galaxy is coming. That seems like a cool movie.
Yeah, I really like the. I'm just worried I'm going to be one of those nerds who doesn't. So thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Boom.
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.